Okay, we have a quorum. I hereby call this meeting to order. My name is Michael Fee, and it is a privilege and an honor for me to serve as moderator for this 2016 annual town meeting. Ladies and gentlemen, please allow me to introduce you to Summer Stewart, Madeline Paquette, Jack Troiano, Charlotte Deason, Andrew Lascalea, Matthew Milton, Antoine Bays, Anna Shaughnessy, Brian Lynch, Patrick McGrath, Nick Smith, Adam Thompson, Sarah Kimball, and Maddie Klein. They are Lincoln Sudbury students and members of the singing group Accent A Cappella. Now, if you are able, would you please rise for the singing of the national anthem? Thank you very much, Accent A Cappella. For the record, I've examined and found in order the call of the meeting, the officer's return of service, and confirmation of timely mailing of the warrant to all residents. I can also report to the hall that the certified free cash, according to the town accountant, Christine Nyhan, is in the amount of $1,190,989.00. Technically, the moderator is required to read each article and all of the related procedural documents to the hall verbatim. As you know, Sudbury has had the good sense to adopt the practice of omitting the reading of the warrant by the moderator with the consent of the hall. Therefore, may I have a motion to dispense with the reading of the call of the annual town meeting, the officer's return of service of notice, and the individual articles of the warrant. Does that receive a second? This requires a majority vote to pass. All in favor, please signify by raising your cards. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Now, in the event I'm unable to preside over an article as we proceed tonight or tomorrow, it is necessary that we appoint an assistant moderator. I have asked Robert Coe, longtime Sudbury resident and former moderator for the Sudbury Water District, to serve in that role. May I have a motion for the appointment of Mr. Coe as assistant town moderator for the 2016 annual town meeting? Thank you. Does that receive a second? It does. This is a majority vote. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That motion passes unanimously. Now, I'd like to take a moment to introduce our town officials for the benefit of the hall. If you would raise your hand when I call your name so that you are known to the voters. To my right is Town Clerk Rosemary Harvell, and to her right, Assistant Town Clerk Veronica Craven. To my immediate left sits Town Council Barbara St. Andre, and to her left are the Board of Selectmen. Pat Brown is the Chair, Susan Uliano is the Vice Chair, Bob Hardy, Len Simon, and Chuck Woodard. Next to them is the Town Manager, Melissa Murphy Rodriguez, And to her left, the members of the Finance Committee, Susan Berry is the chair. Fred Fleury is the vice chair. Joan Carlton, Jeffrey Atwater, Jeff Barker, Adrian Davies, Hosea Garcia Metin, Mark Manassian, Brian Semple. In the front row, Mark Thompson, Technology Administrator, Patty Golden, Senior Administrative Assistant to the Town Manager, Elaine Jones, Legal Assistant, and so much more, Layla Frank, Board of Selectmen's Office Supervisor, and as well as Information Officer, Cynthia Gary, Director of Assessing, Christine Nyhan, Town Accountant, Dennis Kahane, Finance Director, Jaya Carr, Assistant Town Accountant, Robin Porcella, Financial Analyst, Jody Kavlak, Director of Planning and Community Development, Mary Ann Bilodeau, Director of HR and Assistant Town Manager, Kayla McNamara, Parks, Recreation and Aquatic Director, Bill Miles, Fire Chief, Scott Nix, Police Chief, Bill Place, DPW Director and Town Engineer, Jim Kelly, Combined Facilities Director, Mark Herwick, Inspector of the Buildings, Bill Murphy, Health Director, Esme Green, Goodnow Library Director, Debbie Dineen, Conservation Coordinator, Deb Galloway, Council on Aging Director. Finally, in the rear of the hall, keeping us safe and secure tonight, are Sergeant James Espinoza, Officer Kimberly Welch, and Special Officer George Taylor. There are fire exits at the rear of the auditorium where you entered, as well as in the front through the stage. Their bathrooms are located immediately across the hall from the rear exit, as well as outside the cafeteria. There are coffee and snacks available in the area where you checked in tonight. However, there can be no food or drink except water allowed in the auditorium. There are also materials on tables where you entered about various warrant articles as well as other information. There are also extra warrants here in the mail bin at the table in the front of the hall. There's also a handout regarding changes or adjustments to the budget figures. And so if you don't have a warrant or if you need that handout, this is the place to get it. If you need a warrant now, raise your card and I'll have a scout bring you a warrant. Would you mind getting a warrant to this woman and anybody else that raises their card? Scouts, would you mind doing that for me, please? Please keep your card raised until the scouts get the warrants to you. This seems an opportune time to thank the members and leaders of the Sudbury Boy Scouts for their contributions to tonight's town meeting. We have Ryan Grummer, Tommy Neeland, Bailey Prince, Jed Howery, Andrew Mossy, Alex Kilroy, Parker Simon from Boy Scout Troop 63 under the direction of Scoutmaster Peter Fishman. They'll be running the microphones for us tonight. The refreshment stand out in the hall will be staffed by members of the Sudbury Historical Society's Hospitality Committee, led by Ursula Lyons. Proceeds will go to support the operations of that nonprofit organization. Finally, I'd like to thank the staff and crew of Sudbury TV who do a fantastic job of covering town meetings and other events. Our thanks go out to Sudbury TV staff Lynn Puro, Cliff McGann, and Terry Lockhart, and tonight's volunteer crew members Chris McDermott, Carl Butner, and Marie Royer. I'd like to recognize at this time Selectman Hardy.
In Memoriam Resolution 2016 Annual Town Meeting. Whereas the town of Sudbury has enjoyed the blessing of those in the community who gave of their time and talent to enrich the quality of life in our town, and whereas this past year has seen several of its citizens and employees who have rendered public service and civic duty pass from among us. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the town of Sudbury extend its heartfelt sympathy to the families of these persons and recognize their service and dedication to the community. Helga Andrews, George Analons, Walter Bent, David Bronson, Mildred A. Chandler, Joanna Crawford, Maurice Doc Fitzgerald, Barbara Frizzell, Frances Louise Galligan, Jean Godfrey, Spencer R. Goldstein, Ruth Green, Peter B. Lembo, Dorcas Ruth Lemoyne, William Maloney, Roy E. Matthews, Jr., Paul J. Marzilli, Edward R. McAllister, Joan E. Meenan, Irene P. McCarthy, Teresa W. Newton, Joseph Nugent, Jr., Elizabeth Eileen Paradis, Charles R. Quinn, Dorothy Roberts, Donald Summers, Norman Swicker, Marjorie A. Stiles, Jean T. Stone, Richard Carlton Venn, N. Jane West Young. And be it further resolved that the town of Sudbury, in town meeting assembled, record for posterity in the minutes of this meeting its recognition and appreciation for their contributions to our community.
Thank you very much, Bob. As you may know, after 30 years of loyal service to the town, this 2016 annual town meeting will be Bill Place's last as DPW director. Bill is as humble and self-effacing as he is competent, and he was adamant that he did not want any acknowledgement or recognition at town meeting for his stellar service to the town. Sorry, Bill. But we just can't ignore the fact that in your own understated way, you have given so much to this town. We have great roads, miles of walkways, and a tradition of excellent service to the residents. You're the guy who's always been willing to lend a hand. So what I would like to do is for all of us to give you a hand. And thank you very much for your service. I'd like to recognize Representative Carmen Gentile for a proclamation. Representative Gentile.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Is Scott Nassau with us? Scott, where are you? Come over here. Be it hereby known to all that the Massachusetts House of Representatives offers its sincerest congratulations to Scott B. Nassau in recognition of your service and leadership on the Sudbury School Committee. Our entire membership extends its very best wishes and expresses the hope for future good fortune and continued success in all endeavors, given the second day of May 2016 at the State House, Robert DeLeo, Speaker of the House, and offered by myself. Thank you.
I'd also like to take this opportunity to recognize two others who will be wrapping up their public service to the town at the end of this town meeting. First, Paul Griffin, who will step down after 15 years on the Parks and Rec Commission. He was first elected in 2001 and became chairman in 2005. He's also served over the years as a member of the Land Use Priorities Committee, the Community Preservation Committee, and the Ponds and Waterways Committee. Paul's dedication to the town is long-lasting and truly remarkable. Paul, are you here? Is he here? He's probably hiding now. Well, thank you, Paul. I'd also like to say thank you to the and recognize the contributions of the outgoing Planning Board Chairman, Craig Lazat. Craig served for 6 years, two as chairman, and his civil engineering skills were a tremendous asset to that board. Most notably, Craig was instrumental recently in working with the Board of Selectmen to develop a vision and goals for the redevelopment of the Raytheon parcel. And that will be before a special town meeting on June 13th for a vote on the zoning and master development plan. Craig's contributions will impact the town for many years to come, and his steady presence on the planning board will be sorely missed. Thank you, Craig. As is our tradition in Sudbury, As is our tradition in Sudbury, at the annual town meeting, we use Article 1 to honor someone who has performed valuable service for the town by asking him or her to make a motion under Article 1 of the warrant. This year, we honor Elizabeth Liz Radosky, and I ask that she please come forward to the mic and the podium at the front of the hall. Ms. Radosky. If you don't know her, Liz Radosky moved to Sudbury in 1963 and is the mother of three sons and has two grandsons. She formerly worked at the Pentagon as a chemist. Liz has served the town of Sudbury as an election worker since 2008 and is a member of the Sudbury Historical Commission from 2006 to 2015. She was chairman of the Holiday Open House for many years and is now on the Friends of the Hosmer House, and she is an invaluable backup resource to that group. Liz has completed research and arranged restoration of gravestones for six cemeteries in town and will start Wadsworth this summer. She has been involved in the Bridges program with the Sudbury Public Schools for many years as she loves teaching children. She is actively involved in Our Lady of Fatima Parish and has served on many committees. She loves gardening with her son, and they have a large vegetable garden which she shares with her friends. Ms. Radosky for a motion.
Move to accept the reports of the town boards, commissions, officers, and the committee as printed in the 2015 town report, or as otherwise presented, subject to the correction of errors, if any, where found.
Does that motion receive a second? It does. Does the Finance Committee have a position on this motion? Board of Selectmen?
Board of Selectmen supports this article.
This requires a majority vote. All in favor of the motion under Article 1, please raise your cards. All opposed? The motion passes unanimously. Thank you very much, Ms. Radosky. Okay. Before we hear the Board of Selectmen's address and begin consideration of the substantive articles under the warrant, I'd like to take just a couple of minutes to review some of the most important procedural ground rules that govern how town meeting is conducted. First, and I'm not going to repeat everything that's in the warrant, but on pages Roman numeral 2 through Roman numeral 4, there's a section entitled Summary of Basic Town Meeting Procedures. It includes an explanation of the general rules of debate, how the budget and consent calendars work, and a primer on the various types of motions. You can also find specific rules governing town meeting in Articles 1 through 4 of the town's general bylaw. If you have any questions as we move along tonight, please ask them, and we will make sure that everybody understands exactly what's happening at any given time. But in a nutshell, the basic rules are as follows. Only registered voters of the town, non-resident town employees, or elected state officials may speak without leave of the hall. If you wish to speak, you raise your card, and once I recognize you, a scout will deliver a microphone to you at your seat. When you are handed a microphone, it will already be on. And every time you address the hall, you must begin by slowly and clearly stating your name and address so as to enable the town clerk to make a clear and accurate record of these proceedings. According to our bylaws, presenters of articles may speak for a maximum of 10 minutes and all other speakers for a maximum of 5 minutes unless additional time is granted by the hall. Article presenters can manage their time by referring to the timer clock on my right and I will monitor all other speakers with this device, which glows red and makes an ominous noise when your time is up. That joke always gets a laugh. I don't know. One of the comments that was made at the moderators forum back in September was that the cost center's presentations are unduly limited by this 10-minute rule. I agree, and I intend to address that issue by an appropriate motion when we reach the budget under Article 4. Nonetheless, I would urge all other speakers and presenters to be aware of the fact that we have 43 articles to address and that our meetings run from 7:30 to 10:30 p.m. sharp tonight, tomorrow, and if necessary, Wednesday. If we do not complete all the business within that time frame, the town bylaws require that we adjourn at least to the following Monday. It would be my preference that we can conclude our business long before that. I will do my best to ensure that the proceedings move along crisply, and I hope that all the presenters and speakers understand that succinctness will be very much appreciated by me and by the hall. Every matter that's voted on at town meeting comes in the form of a motion. The warrant articles themselves are not self-starting, and so you will often hear a presenter begin by stating, "I move in the words of the article." Unless you move in the words of an article exactly as it is printed in the warrant, every presenter must explain to the hall the changes in his or her motion and how they differ from the words that appear in the warrant. All motions of substance, including motions introducing an article and motions to amend, must be delivered to me, the town clerk, and Mr. Thompson, the technology administrator, in writing before they are made. Please also bear in mind that you can only make a motion to amend an article when you are first recognized and not in the midst or at the end of your remarks. In order to be fair to everyone, I will not entertain any motions to amend that do not strictly adhere to these parameters. A couple of notes on voting. Each article in your warrant describes the quantum of votes necessary for an article to pass. Usually it's a simple majority, but specific types of actions, zoning articles, for instance, require a two-third vote in order to pass. Certain articles have even, or motions have even more stringent requirements. For instance, a motion to take an article out of order requires four-fifths of the hall in order to pass. I will remind you of the quantum of vote required for each motion before we take a vote. And I will then ask all those in favor to raise your cards and all those opposed to raise as well. I will then count the vote and announce it. If a vote is too close for me to call, I will call for a head count by the tellers. Given the substantial amount of time it takes to do a head count, I ask that you not request such a procedure unless you are certain that I have miscalculated the vote. I assure you that unless the standing count is obvious, I will call for a head count myself. There is a note in the warrant about decorum, and I'm not going to spend any time repeating guidelines that really amount to basic common sense. I will ask that you recognize the fact that on almost all issues of any substance or complexity, reasonable minds can differ. And a healthy respect for both sides of an argument is essential if we're to achieve any type of meaningful consensus as a town. I will require that we treat every speaker tonight with courtesy and respect, no matter how strongly someone may disagree with the point of view that's being expressed. There will be no clapping, hissing, booing, or other audible noises for or against any speakers, either before, during, or after their presentations. Speakers can't make disrespectful comments, whether directed at a voter, a speaker, or a town official. And if you do so, your right to speak will be terminated. Finally, I'd like to clarify how I'll be handling the call of the question in this and future town meetings. And this is a change, so please pay attention. A motion to move the question or call the question will be taken up as any other motion made from the floor. For those of you who are new to town meeting, a motion to move the question or call the question is a request to end all the debate and to move quickly to a vote on the article. I will no longer respond to persons who simply yell out, "Call the question." To move the question, a person must be recognized first by me, and the motion to move the question must be then immediately mentioned. In other words, you can't take the mic, recite your opinion on an article, and then try to shut off debate by moving the question at the conclusion of your comments. Please also understand that I have the right to rule that a motion to move the question is out of order if I believe that the motion is unfairly or prematurely limiting the voters' right to hear answers to questions or to better understand an article or an amendment. Okay? I now recognize the Chair of the Board of Selectmen, Pat Brown, for a State of the Town address. Please note that for this address, as well as for the Finance Committee's State of the Budget presentation, there will be no set time limit, although I'm assured by Ms. Brown that she will be succinct.
Right. So good evening. I'm Pat Brown, Chair of the Board of Selectmen. Welcome to town meeting, and thank you all for coming. And I know everybody's eager to get to work tonight, so I'll try to make this brief. This is a very partial recap of the year since 2015 annual town meeting. Last year at this time, the town center roadway project was just beginning and the new police station was under construction. We now have that new police station complete and we're getting close in town center. The curbs go in this week, stonewall construction is next, and then paving and striping. Last year at this time, Mary Ann Bilodeau, our assistant town manager, served as interim town manager during our transition period, following the departure of our former long-term town manager, Maureen Valente. During this transition, Sudbury benefited from Mary Ann's professional work and guidance and her ability to respond to the unexpected. So thank you, Mary Ann. Our new town manager is Melissa Murphy Rodriguez. She's been with us for 6 months, diving right into our finances, introducing evening hours at town offices on Tuesdays, and town manager office hours and creating the town's Facebook page, which no longer has more likes than Concord's, but I expect you to fix that. Welcome to Sudbury, Melissa. She's hired key new staff, including Kayla McNamara, who's been our Park and Recreation Director for 3 months, and Dennis Cohen, who's been our Finance Director for 3 weeks. Bill Place, our town engineer and Director of Public Works for 34 years, would prefer not to be recognized. Too bad. Thank you, Bill. We'll miss you. On the budget, this year the Finance Committee assembled the Budget Strategies Task Force to try to foster an understanding across all three cost centers, Sudbury Public Schools, Lincoln-Sudbury Regional High School, and the town of Sudbury, so that they could talk together about the challenges they each face and develop a set of common priorities. This has been a tough year, including the negotiation of new labor contracts across all three cost centers, very limited unallocated cash, unexpected new costs, a multitude of capital needs, and new staff, both paid and volunteer. So hats off to the Finance Committee for rising to this challenge and producing the budget we'll be voting on tonight. Moving beyond finances, when we left town meeting last spring, we had reached stalemate on the future of the Minuteman Vocational Regional High School. Following a heroic effort by the selectmen for Minuteman District towns, including our own Len Simon, the Minuteman District got to yes, a new regional agreement. Sudbury withdrew from the Minuteman District at a special town meeting in February and is preparing a smooth transition for Sudbury students who will be attending vocational high school in the fall of 2017. Unlike last year and the year before that, there is no Minuteman article on this warrant. As a result of the Sudbury Listening Project, the Board of Selectmen engaged trainer John Wortman to manage 4 sessions with us to explore how the selectmen communicate and interact and how we can be more effective as a team. We still disagree, but we're learning to hear each other out respectfully, focus on our policy disagreements, and make decisions even in the absence of consensus. As a town, we've made progress in many other areas as well, including extending the senior tax exemption with the help of our legislators, and particularly Representative Gentile, exploring design options for a new Fairbank Community Center, working with the Sudbury Historical Society to renovate the Loring Parsonage, and beginning to negotiate a conservation restriction at the Wayside Inn. And there are at least as many other projects I'm just going to omit in the interest of time. Aside from bringing on board a new town manager, the major challenge we expected last year was the redevelopment of the former Raytheon site on Route 20. The purchaser proposes a mixed-use development, Meadow Walk at Sudbury, including 250 units of rental housing under Chapter 40B. Their application for a comprehensive permit is currently before the Zoning Board of Appeals, and the town is negotiating a development agreement on the entire project to get the best possible outcome for Sudbury. Then there were the unexpected challenges. In September, the town learned of another proposed residential development off Hudson Road, near the town center, of 250 units of rental housing under Chapter 40B, the village at Sudbury Station. There's been vigorous comment from many citizens, and the selectmen have retained legal counsel to advocate for the town. This application is also currently before the Zoning Board of Appeals. Finally, the Eversource Transmission Project. As you probably know, I have recused myself from discussion on this project because my property is close enough to the right-of-way that I have a conflict of interest. But although I cannot participate in any way, I read the stories both in the papers and online, and I can see the effort the town is putting into opposition to this project. Next year, we will continue to face all three of those major challenges, a difficult budget year, and the normal business of town government, plus whatever else comes up. We need to think strategically about long-term projects, such as school consolidation, funding retiree health care obligations, the future of the Route 20 corridor, and more. And we need to recognize we still have to respond nimbly to current events. So how will we do this? We rely on the efforts of both our professional staff and our committed citizen volunteers. We've seen a host of new residents this year bringing their energy and drive to town government. Thank you all and welcome. There's plenty to work on. We have a new commitment to civility to direct our efforts into constructive disagreement rather than bickering. We have our shared love for Sudbury. I encourage you to follow the town's Facebook page and the town manager's newsletter for an overview of town happenings and to track the issues that are important to you on the Sudbury Town website. Consider attending meetings or watching them on Sudbury TV. I'm grateful to everyone for coming tonight and for stepping up to do the work of town government and for bringing your particular passion and expertise to Sudbury. And now it's time to work. On to town meeting. Thank you.
Thanks, Pat. In order to expedite town meeting, Sudbury uses a consent calendar to facilitate the passage of articles that appear to raise no controversy. Consent calendar is structured so as to allow the motions under these articles to be acted upon as one unit and to be passed by unanimous vote without debate. This year, the consent calendar contains two articles, Articles 9 and 10. There's an explanation in your warrant as to the specific procedures associated with consent calendar, but basically it goes like this. I'll call out the articles one by one. If any voter has a doubt about passing any motions regarding that article or wishes an explanation of the subject on the consent calendar, the voter should stand and say the word hold in a loud, clear voice when the number of the article is called. I will then inquire as to whether the request for a hold is for a question or for debate. If the purpose of the request is merely to ask a question, we will attempt to obtain a satisfactory answer. If the voter is satisfied, the article will remain on the consent calendar absent a further request to hold. If the purpose of the request was to hold the article for debate, the article will be removed from the consent calendar and restored to its original place in the warrant, to be brought up and debated and voted on in the usual way. No voter should hesitate to exercise the right to remove a matter from the consent calendar. However, I ask that you exercise that prerogative only in cases of genuine concern. I'll now read the roll call of the consent calendar, Article 9, Chapter 90, Highway Funding. Is that for a question or a debate, Ms. Coe? Okay, well, that sounds like a question that I will direct to the FinCom now, and if we can satisfy you on that, we'll move forward as I explained. Does FinCom have anything to say about Article 9? Still not working.
The FinCom has taken no position on Article 9 or Article 10, and I believe that the information in the warrant that we would report at town meeting is not correct.
Mrs. Coe, does that answer your question? Yes, Mr. Coe.
I believe this is a money article, and I believe that under our bylaws, the FinCom must take a position on a money article. Is that not the case?
I think, according to town council, there's no money being appropriated, Mr. Coe. It's only to authorize entry into contracts. Does that answer your question?
I guess so.
Okay. Ms. Coe, did we satisfactorily answer your question?
Yes, I just wanted to be sure that we didn't pass an article without a FinCom report if it was required.
Okay, and I think the consensus here is that FinCom report is not required on Article 9. Are there any requests for holds on Article 9? I see none. Article 10, Town School Revolving Funds. I see no one who wishes to be heard. Did I miss someone? Mrs. Coe.
Yes. School revolving funds is a little bit different from Chapter 90. So if they have an answer about why there's no report, I'd like to hear that.
And you're directing this question to the FinCom, is
yes.
that correct? Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay. Ms. Berry?
It was our understanding that this article has been the revolving funds have been on the consent calendar for several years, and we've taken no position unless this article is held, in which case we will then take a position.
Okay, I'd like to hear your position either now or when it would come in.
Can you say that again, Ms. Coe?
In other words, I'd like to hear the FinCom's position, if they have it now, I'd like to hear it now, otherwise I'd hold it so they can get us a position in the regular sequence.
Okay, so it sounds like you're holding Article 10. Is that correct?
Yeah, 10. I'm sorry, Article 10.
Okay. So we have Article 9 remains on the consent calendar. Article 10 is held for later debate. I'll ask now for a motion to take Article 9 out of order at this time. Can I get a motion? Okay, is there a second? Okay, this takes a 4/5 majority in order for us to take Article 9 out of order. All in favor of taking Article 9 out of order, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes nearly unanimously and by well more than a 4/5 majority. So I guess now on Article 10, I will ask the Finance Committee if it has a position, just for the record, on Article 10.
I'm sorry?
No, 9 is off.
We would have to take. We'll have to.
I'm sorry. I misspoke.
Yeah,
my question is. I guess I don't need your position. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay.
So my question, the motion now is whether or not Article 10 can pass as part of the consent calendar, and that requires a unanimous vote. Is that correct?
No.
Oh, my mistake. I apologize. So we're taking I misspoke again. Sorry. Article 10 has been held. Article 9 is what we're voting on. We're taking Article 9 out of order. It requires a majority vote in order to pass. All those in favor of passing the motion under Article 9, please raise your cards. All those opposed? I see no one in opposition. The motion passes unanimously. Article 9 passes. Article 10 is held. Okay. Article 2. FY16 budget adjustments. Motion by Selectman Woodard.
Does this work?
No.
We have technical difficulties. Try it. Speak loudly.
Move to indefinitely postpone the article.
Did anyone hear that? Selectman Woodard moved to indefinitely postpone Article 2. Does that receive a second? It does.
Move to it. Are you doing it for me?
I did. Okay. Would you like to be heard on that? Okay. Does the Finance Committee have a position on the motion to indefinitely postpone Article 2? The
Finance Committee unanimously supports indefinite postponement.
Okay. I'm having trouble hearing you, so I think we need to get some technical assistance with respect to Ms. Berry's microphone. Please, can we replace it?
This one, I think, is working. I think it just didn't have it close enough.
Okay.
The Finance Committee unanimously approves indefinite recommending approval of indefinite postponement of Article 2.
Okay. Does the Board of Selectmen have a position? There he is.
The Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Okay.
And supports the postponement.
Supports the motion to indefinitely postpone Article 2. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Does anybody wish to be heard on the motion to indefinitely postpone Article 2? I see no one. Let's vote. This requires a majority. All in favor of indefinitely postponing Article 2, raise their cards. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Article 3. Stabilization Fund. Selectman Woodard for a motion.
Move to transfer $280,190 from free cash to the stabilization fund established under Article 12 of the October 7, 1982 special town meeting.
Is there a second? It does. Mr. Woodard, presentation?
The Board of Selectmen has long had a goal of raising the level of the stabilization fund to 5% of our general fund revenues. We finally reached that target a few years ago. Since reaching that target, the Finance Committee has come out with recommendations on free cash, which also include a recommendation to use a free cash above a suitable cushion to raise the stabilization fund to the 5% level to the extent that it doesn't meet that target. And, of course, each year as the budget gets larger, we need to keep adding money to the stabilization fund to maintain that 5% target. And just one final comment. The rating agencies generally expect the town, with a AAA bond rating like Sudbury, to have a stabilization fund at this level. So the purpose of this article is to in transferring this cash, we would bring the stabilization fund up to that 5% level.
Thank you. Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval of this article.
Mr. Woodard, how does the Board of Selectmen feel about this article?
The Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Okay. Anybody wish to be heard on the motion under Article 3? I see no one. We have a two-thirds on this? Quantum of vote required for this motion is two-thirds to pass. All those in favor of the motion under Article 3, please raise your cards. All opposed? The motion passes by well more than the two-thirds required. Article 4 is the budget. Before we get to Article 4, a few brief notes on procedure. We will begin with a so-called limiting motion from the Finance Committee that proposes an appropriation not to exceed the amount required to fund the Finance Committee's budget proposal. I note for your information that the numbers in your warrant are slightly different from the numbers you are going to see on the view graph. And if you need to see them in something other than on the view graph, there is a handout by the mailbox down here on the front tables that sets out the information that's you're going to see on the view graph. The limiting motion, if it is passed, will then establish the overall limits of the budget. A vote in favor of the motion does not mean that the hall has approved a particular distribution of the total amount as set forth in the warrant, but rather establishes the upper limits of our budget appropriation for fiscal 2017. Once we dispose of the limiting motion, the Finance Committee will make a main motion on the budget. At that time, I will read, line by line, items 100 to 900 in the main motion. At that time, you can make a motion to reduce a line item or to increase one item and decrease another, as long as the net amount does not cause the total amount appropriated to exceed the amount established by the limiting motion. Everybody understand that? Okay. In other words, it will be out of order to make a motion to increase a line item alone if that increase would cause the main budget figure to exceed the limited motion amount. If anybody's unclear about this procedure, you should look at the bottom third pages of Roman numeral 2 and 3 in your warrant. If you have any questions, stand and make a point of order, and we'll try to get your question answered. I'm now going to recognize Susan Berry. She's the chairperson of the Finance Committee for the budget limiting motion.
Move that the amount appropriated under FY17 budget not exceed the sum of $91,043,226.
Does that motion receive a second? It does. I will now ask Ms. Berry to deliver the FinCom statement of the town's financial condition. As was the case with Ms. Brown's presentation on the state of the town, there's no set time limit for this address. Ms. Berry?
Just waiting. Thanks. In my remarks on the FY17 recommended budget and town finances, I will touch on the six topics that you see on the screen. Based on the preliminary revenue figures, which showed a potential increase of slightly more than 3% in revenue for FY17, the Finance Committee asked each cost center to prepare a budget that took into account our guidance that the combined increase for the three cost centers be no more than 2.6%. Although the Finance Committee guidance letter set an overall maximum combined budget increase of 2.6%, it did not stipulate how any resulting increase might be allocated among the three cost centers. However, we did ask that any cost center presenting a budget with an increase greater than 2.6% also include a detailed description of how that cost center would reach a budget within the 2.6% increase guidance. All three cost centers initially presented budgets with growth of 2.6%. However, to get to 2.6%, the Sudbury Public School budget included a salary line item cut of about $325,000. The need for this cut was primarily a result of an unexpectedly large increase in anticipated out-of-district tuition costs for FY17. Despite the initial cost center budget increases within the guidance of 2.6%, there was a gap of $350,000 that needed to be closed to get to a no-override budget. This gap was chiefly due to a shift in the percentage of the Ellis assessment that Sudbury will pay. Although the assessment percentages historically shift back and forth between Sudbury and Lincoln, the required minimum contribution calculated by the state this year results in an unusually large increase for Sudbury in FY17. This shift resulted in about a $351,000 increase in Sudbury's assessment over what the assessment would be if the percentages had stayed essentially the same as they were in FY16. The FY17 budgets of each of the cost centers include an increased amount to fund the other post-employment benefits, or OPEB, normal cost. As discussed at last year's annual town meeting, normal costs are the present value of future health care benefits earned by current employees in the current year. The addition to this line item in each cost center's FY17 budget brings that line item to two-thirds of the total normal cost and accounts for almost $260,000 of the FY17 increase. We anticipate that the FY18 budgets will contain the full amount of the normal cost. At that point, we will be fully funding the OPEB normal cost, but we will still need to consider strategies for addressing the large OPEB liability that is a result of not having funded these future costs in past years. Oops. Following the 2015 town meeting, the Finance Committee requested that the Board of Selectmen form a new committee, the Budget Strategies Task Force, composed of the town manager, the SBS superintendent, the LS superintendent, and two representatives from each of the finance committee, from the Finance Committee, the Board of Selectmen, the Sudbury Public School Committee, and the Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School Committee. The mission of this newly formed committee is to enhance the town of Sudbury's budgeting process by means of collaboration and communication among the three major cost centers, SPS, LS, and the town. Following the initial budget hearings, the three cost centers were asked to bring proposals for closing the $350,000 gap to a joint meeting of the Finance Committee and the Budget Strategies Task Force. Thanks to the three cost centers' cooperation, proposals were presented at the joint meeting that ultimately resulted in an initial no-override budget recommendation by the Finance Committee that included adding $125,000 of free cash and $12,000 from LS to the SPS budget to help ameliorate the impact of the out-of-district tuition costs. With these additions and the proposed modifications to the cost centers' budgets, the result was a 1.91% increase in the town budget, a 2.81% increase in the Sudbury Public School budget, and a 2.05% increase in the Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School budget. Note that the 2.05% increase in the Lincoln Sudbury budget is the increase in the Lincoln Sudbury budget, not in the assessment, which is increasing by 3.81% for the reasons that I discussed earlier. However, the Finance Committee also agreed to review SPS out-of-district costs again closer to town meeting. And based on increased costs since the budget hearings, the Finance Committee voted at our April 25th meeting to recommend an increase to the SPS budget of an additional $100,000 from free cash. That adjustment resulted in the 3.06 increase in the SPS budget shown on the screen. For FY17, the Finance Committee is recommending the operating budget on the handout and that you saw on the screen, a handout that you should have gotten or could pick up when you came in. Several line items on the handout are $100,000 larger than in the warrant and reflect the $100,000 increase in the SPS budget. That $100,000 increase is also included in the limiting motion. The Finance Committee is recommending an operating budget of $91,043,226, which results in a total general fund budget at this point of approximately $91.7 million, with fixed costs such as the overlay and cherry sheet expenses added. The recommended operating budget represents a residential tax increase of 2.39%, and a total increase in taxes of approximately $2 million. The Finance Committee vote was not unanimous. Two members of the committee expressed concerns about the increases in staffing included in the budgets of the town and LS, given that SBS may need to make staffing cuts. They were also concerned about the impact of these staffing additions on what is likely to be another difficult budget cycle in FY18. However, the majority of the Finance Committee believes the budget reflects a balance of the needs of the three cost centers. The town manager and senior staff have made cuts to many line items in their budget, have cut some staff positions, consolidated some positions, and added others in order to most effectively provide services while keeping their budget increased to under 2%. The LS administration has made cuts and changes to benefits that have resulted in savings that allow them to add positions they have felt are needed, but that they have been unable to accommodate in prior budgets, with a resulting budget increase of slightly over 2%. Over a quarter of the LS increase is the $162,130 increase in their OPEB line item. The certified free cash amount, as you heard earlier, is $1,190,989. The Finance Committee recommends that the town maintain a level of unallocated free cash equal at least to 0.5% of the current year's operating budget. That is the $454,716 amount on the slide. In Article 3, the town voted to put that's a correction from the 191 on the screen. So it's $280,190 from free cash in the stabilization fund. Taking these amounts into account, plus the $225,000 the Finance Committee is recommending for the operating budget, there will be $231,083 in free cash remaining to be used as voted by town meeting. Of that amount, $185,000 is being requested in Article 2 of the special town meeting for litigation fees and to hire a government relations firm to assist the town in its efforts to oppose the Eversource transmission line proposal. Which brings us to capital requests. Since the acceptance of the 2013 Strategic Financial Planning Report, the Capital Funding Committee has recommended funding strategies for the capital needs of the town, SPS, and LS, including a ceiling for capital spending on our existing infrastructure, with the intent to limit the spending by tax levy to a level roughly equal to that of FY14, not including the financing of large new projects. For the past few years, capital requests have been funded primarily through the use of free cash and not from one-year increases in the tax levy, as you see on this slide. The much larger numbers at the top are capital by available funds or free cash. Therefore, articles that request funding for capital items, the articles that you see on the screen, will need to be funded through capital exclusion or debt exclusion, and if passed by town meeting and at the ballot on May 17th, will increase the tax rate. If all the capital requests on the screen pass, the increase in FY17 for capital and debt exclusions will be $2,310,070. This will represent an additional increase in the residential tax rate of 3%. Because of the large increase in taxes that will result from the passage of all the capital articles, the Finance Committee has recommended that a few of these be postponed. However, you, the town meeting attendees, and ultimately the registered voters of Sudbury will make the final decision about which items you consider to be necessary and are willing to support financially. As you make your decisions, you may wish to consult page 8 of the Finance Committee section in the back of your warrant to calculate the cost of each article on your individual tax bill. As you vote on these articles, please also keep in mind that to protect the quality and integrity of our capital assets, we need to invest in their preservation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Berry. I'm now going to recognize representatives of each of the cost centers to explain their positions on the budget. Town Manager Melissa Rodriguez will speak for the town, Superintendent Ann Wilson for SPS, and Superintendent Bella Wong for LS. Now, as you know, Article 2, Section 11 of the bylaw provides that the initial presentation of the proponents of an article may not exceed 10 minutes in length unless consent is given by a majority of the hall. In the past, the hall has recognized the inherent difficulties associated with having three cost centers present within a 10-minute time frame and has authorized each administrator to speak for 5 minutes for a total presentation of 15 minutes. One of the improvements that was suggested at the moderators' forum is that given the importance and the complexity of the information and the fact that many residents are hearing and digesting this for the first time, 5 minutes per cost center is simply insufficient. I agree. And I would ask the hall for a motion to allow each cost center a total of 8 minutes for an overall presentation time of 24 minutes. Does that have a second? All in favor, raise their cards. All opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. Okay. Ms. Rodriguez.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Melissa Murphy Rodriguez, and I have been serving as your town manager for the past 6 months. I'm very proud of this budget and excited to be here today to present it to you. I'd like to thank the Finance Committee, especially Susan Berry, and the representatives from the other cost centers. Our collaboration over the past few months has been refreshing and led to the success of this budget. Finally, I'd like to recognize and thank our employees. Together, we have continued the great traditions of Sudbury, and I'm proud to be a part of this team. So FY16, a few quick updates. On January 30th, we had the grand opening of our new police station on Hunted Road. Chief Nix, Jim Kelly, and the Permanent Building Committee led the charge on this project and should be applauded for their work. And under the direction of DPW Director Bill Place, the Town Center project is nearing completion, I promise. He tells me it is, so we're getting there. But it looks good. So this year's budget increase is about $427,000 and less than 2%. The town operates 7 clusters when you include benefits, and within those 7 clusters are approximately 30 separate budgets. Each budget needs to be created with different laws, different needs, different agendas, and different goals in mind. And in the end, we develop a comprehensive budget which maintains or improves town services, implements new goals and initiatives that have been deemed critical by department heads, and adequately compensates employees while being mindful of the taxpayer. This is just the town services to be within the general fund. It does not include enterprise funds or a debt. For fiscal year 17, our fixed costs increased by $720,000, but our budget only increased by $427,000. We cut approximately $300,000 through employee consolidations, electricity savings, and gas savings. Each year, we offset a portion of the town's budget with revenues from the ambulance revolving account. This year, we will be using $641,912 to offset a portion of the fire department and a portion of 911. This chart represents the different portions of the town budget. As you can see, public safety is the largest portion of the budget, with public works next and unclassified benefits following closely behind. Unclassified benefits includes not only employee and retiree benefits, but also workers' compensation and indemnity, property, and casualty insurances. I think it's very important to note that our cost for medical insurance benefits is still lower than it was 11 years ago due to municipal health care reform. Now let's discuss some of the priorities that we have added in this year's budget. In human services, we will be increasing our information referral specialist from part-time to full-time. Studies have shown that Sudbury's elderly population has increased over the past 6 years by 14% and is expected to steadily increase until 2030. We will be consolidating the assistant planner position and the engineering position to create an environmental planner. Through this consolidation, we are eliminating a benefited position and creating a more attractive position that will help several departments and help the town comply with the recent federal stormwater regulations. Through that consolidation, we are saving the town $31,000. A few other minor changes include our first hazardous waste day in several years, changes to employee salaries to adjust for the changes in the minimum wage, which is mostly in the rec department or at elections, GPS trackers for all DPW vehicles, including our snow contractors, so we can track where people are and make sure that we're getting everything we're paying for when we have snow contractors in. We're doing some small increases in hours for our planning department, our facilities department, and in the town manager's office. This year, we're also funding OPEB at two-thirds of normal costs. OPEB is new to the budget this year, and it stands for Other Post-Employment Benefits for Retirees. And the normal cost is the cost of the projected retirement health benefits for current employees in the current year. The Strategic Planning Committee for OPEB had recommended the town stop funding this in fiscal year 16, fund it two-thirds of normal costs in fiscal year 17, and fund the full normal cost by fiscal year 18. We also had many requests this year that we could not fulfill within the constraints of our budget. However, I recognize that in the future, we will need to consider additional staffing for the police department, the fire department, which has had the same staffing since 1978, the conservation department, and the building department. And it's important to note that the building department just this year had 400 more roof permits when we had discussed this a few months ago than we had seen the year before. These department issues will need to be addressed so that we can maintain our current levels of service in our continually changing community. Currently, in this town's budget, we have an increase of less than one full-time employee as compared to fiscal year 10. Further, we level funded most of our operating accounts, including snow and ice, and already this year, in a year that really we didn't have a lot of snow, that's in a deficit of over $130,000. And I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
We'll hold the questions for later. Dr. Wilson for SPS.
Thank you.
Thank you. At SPS, our mission is to enable all students to reach their intellectual and personal potential. We work in partnership with families and the community to provide the highest quality education for all students in the safest environment possible. To begin the presentation, I would like to highlight three things that have impacted our budget this year and will impact our budget development for fiscal year 17. First, as you heard already from Ms. Berry, we have experienced unanticipated special education costs this year, which have impacted our current year budget and also have a significant impact on our fiscal year 17 budget. Second, as always, enrollment impacts our budget, and we will expect a slight decrease in enrollment for next year, and we have adjusted staffing within the fiscal year 17 budget accordingly. We will continue to watch our enrollment patterns and trends and make decisions that are in the best interest of our students. Finally, we have recently completed the process of negotiating successor agreements with all of our employee unions, and as expected, settlement of those contracts impacts on our operating budget as well, given that approximately 85% of our budget is salaries and benefits. Our vision in the Sudbury Public Schools reflects our commitment to excellence in educating all students in the area of academics, as well as social-emotional development, so that they will be influential, contributing members of our community and society in the future. We have developed a theory of action. Those of you that have been at town meeting in the past several years have seen the same theory of action. It is what guides our work. We hope to bring our vision to life through this theory of action, and this is a causal statement that shows that if we place our value and our work on differentiated high-quality instruction, safe environment, instructional leadership, and staff development, and the use of data to inform instruction, then we expect the result of this focus will lead us to students being challenged and varied learning needs met, growth in our capacity as educators, and a narrowing of the current achievement proficiency gaps. From this theory of action, our strategic objectives were developed. The objectives are predicated upon the notion that the instructional core is necessary focus for our efforts. This is the interaction of teachers and students in the presence of content or curriculum. We focus on this interaction as we plan programmatic enhancements, professional development, and as we develop and identify assessments of student progress. Our four strategic objectives for this year are on the screen. You can see that the first two goals have to do with inclusive education and social, emotional, and behavioral supports for all students. This applies to all students. The inclusive education goal relates to students with disabilities as well as students who require additional challenge and students who come with what we think is a typical rate of skill. We expect every child to grow every year. Goal 3 and 4 relate to student services and safety. So goal 3, we had an evaluation of our student services programs and administrative structure this year, and we recently had the report presented to the school committee. It's available online for anyone that's interested, but this will help us to have an outside view of the work that we're doing, and there are many recommendations from that report. And then finally, we're continuing to implement enhanced safety measures in all of our buildings. So just to highlight some of the initial accomplishments for fiscal year 16, the next two slides give you an idea. I won't read all of the accomplishments. However, I want to draw your attention to the variety of accomplishments and the focus on our students, the focus on enhanced learning opportunities, not only academic but social, emotional, and focusing on professional development for our staff, including teachers and administrators. Another slide with some accomplishments. I also want to draw your attention to the fact that, again, we have settled all of our employee contracts, and we've transitioned to some new school leaders due to retirements and moving on. So the challenges, where we have accomplishments, we always have challenges as well. And as you heard, we have some challenges with meeting the needs of our students with disabilities and being able to provide services for those students which are not available within the district. So responding to those diverse needs is a constant challenge for us. Every student deserves to have their needs met in the best way possible. We do our best to create programs within the district. However, sometimes the best interest of the child is for a highly specialized program. So that leads to the unanticipated costs that we have recognized this year and will have impacting our budget going into next year. As many of you know, we have implemented a one-to-one technology program in our middle school. Sustaining and maintaining that now that we are at full implementation is a challenge and will continue to be a challenge, requiring additional human resources to support those efforts. We're constantly balancing the augmentation of instructional capacity and then sustaining those improvements once they're made. And the facilities management and being able to utilize cost savings from utilities to implement additional cost saving measures is a challenge for the fiscal year 17 budget. So you now have before you our fiscal year 17 non-override budget. And on behalf of the school committee and our school system, I would like to express appreciation for the collaborative budgeting process this year and the additional $225,000 allocation afforded SPS in the light of our unanticipated out-of-district and in-district special education costs. Despite the additional funding, as you'll notice, we currently have an $88,182 deficit. We are working diligently to close that gap, and we will continue to watch our enrollment and look for other cost-saving measures as we finish out this year, and we will commit to closing that $88,182 gap. So for next year, with the budget the way that it is, unfortunately, we were unable to fund any of our needs or any improvements. We are staying the course. We will continue the strategies that we've employed to deliver an excellent education for all of our students. We will not be diminishing the work that we've been doing. However, all needs and improvements are on hold for fiscal year 17. We have a moratorium on additional technology spending because we simply do not have the human resources to continue to support any additional technology. We have 3,000 devices in our school system and a very small technology department. We also will be decreasing the amount of funds available to us for implementation of more cost-saving measures so that we can make this budget work. And any innovations are on hold for next year. And finally, I'd like to thank you and let you know that it's an honor for me to serve the Sudbury community and to work with a talented and dedicated team of educators and support staff with a laser focus on what is best for our students, along with parents who are actively involved in their children's education and strong community partnerships. Thank you for your support as we commit to excellence for all Sudbury students.
Thank you, Dr. Wilson. Superintendent Wong.
Moderator fee. Okay, welcome tonight. I'd like to acknowledge the members of the school committee that are here with us, Rada Alina Klepkis, Kevin Matthews, Rada Gargaya, Nancy Marshall, Patty Mostu, and Joel Quirk. I also want to acknowledge the support of Peter Rhodes, Director of Finance and Operations, who supported the building of this budget. Our budget is always guided by our core values. We are guided by our day-to-day operations, but it also helps inform what goes into the budget, what comes out of the budget. It also helps us support our overarching school goals. Some highlights under what students should be able to do by the time they graduate. We are currently in the first year of our Global Scholars Program. We had a successful implementation of Google App for Education. Starting July 1, we switched from first class to Gmail and Google Apps. All our students were given Gmail accounts, but they only operated within the LS community. And so we are excited. July 1, we're going to flip the switch. And so those Gmail accounts for all the students are going to go active for everyone. We also are planning for a hub for innovation. That will be housed at the house at the corner of the property. Along with ensuring access to equity and excellence for all our students, the Walker Report, which was a consultant that reviewed our student services, those recommendations are substantially implemented and largely were done with training of our staff. We also initiated a ninth grade diversity workshops this year that were implemented at the same time MCAS was administered. We utilized 68 upperclassmen to help do mentor and peer training, and we're excited about that. On our goal for narrowing student achievement gaps, we used targeted skills classes for our students in the ninth grade in our macro program, and with the intervention specialist that is in the FY17 proposal to expand those to ninth graders for all our students next year. Our 10th grade MCAS scores, they are fairly consistent, but actually in English and math, we have more students in the advanced from proficient, and in science, more students in proficient that were in needs improvement. So an uptick in all our scores across all arenas. And largely, it was an improvement in students with disabilities, so our students on IEPs. Sure. Our LS graduates also consistent in what they are achieving once they leave here, but a slight increase in students going to four-year and two-year colleges over the prior year. Our enrollment, our in-district enrollments, kids that are in school, not including our out-of-district students, are 1,602 students this year. We are projecting 1,572 students coming in next fall, so a difference of 30 students. And just a review of our budget priorities, to develop an operating budget to satisfy the financial guidelines set forth by both Lincoln and Sudbury Finance Committees, support our core values and school goals, support the comprehensive needs of our projected student enrollment who represent diverse learning styles, retain high-quality faculty and staff, maintain operational efficiencies, ensure health and safety, maximize financial allocation toward educational programs, and some of this will be reflected in the FY17 budget proposal, strengthen specialized in-district programs, foster postgraduate growth and success, and address the Lincoln-Sudbury OPEB liability. The FY17 proposal is a product of a collaborative and supportive budget process from the representatives of both towns, Lincoln and Sudbury, along with the members of our school committee. In particular, for Sudbury, this commenced the prior summer in many meetings housed in the Flynn Building, moderated by Susan Berry, Chair of the Finance Committee. This slide highlights the impact of the FY17 budget. It restores instructional capital and training budgets that were reduced in the FY16 budget. The instructional capital includes the funding for our computer technology, and the training budgets, again, helps us train in-house to comply with changing state regulations and also the Walker Report recommendations. It maintains our current class size median, which is high. It is a median of 24 or 25 across all our academic core subjects. Even with a change of 30 students for the coming fall, we've already started scheduling the students, and so our median class sizes will not change all that much for the coming year. It does reduce our utility budget and almost $70,000. For FY16, we reduce it by $50,000, so a reduction of $120,000 over 2 years. We can attribute this largely to the solar array canopy and also the upgraded energy management control system. It reduces the budget for insurance benefits by $230,000. This can be attributed to the negotiated contract adjustment. Starting next year, staff will be paying 5% more to the cost of their health insurance, and also attributed to the beneficial experience of the Neshoba Minuteman Insurance Group. It reduces the assessment due in our debt service, accelerated by refinancing that we did last year for a total of almost $90,000. And I am very thankful and appreciative of the support from the LS School Committee and our town boards to be able to reallocate some of the savings, which totaled almost $400,000, to some modest incremental improvements to support some critical needs. And those needs are outlined: a 0.4 FTE increase to school nurse. That means we will have 2 full-time nurses for 1,600 students. The national standard is 1 full-time nurse for 750 students. It will allow a semester increase in math to bring it to the same FTE for our science courses. We will add a special educator with the expertise for students on the autistic spectrum to comply with the Walker Report. We are adding a 1.0 intervention specialist toward our goal of closing the achievement gap, but this again will give us 3 additional classes targeted for 9th grade students and increase the capacity for tutors in the Academic Support Center to then serve other students. For the first time, we are adding programmatic improvements in over a decade. We are introducing Mandarin to the high school next school year, and we are also bringing drama instruction back into the day program. And then additional 0.5 computer technician to help us support our network infrastructure. And it also increases funding to address the OPEB liability. Just to give you an overall picture of how the budget relates to the prior year, this year for the first time we were added to include funding for the OPEB liability, but last year we were not. So if you take this year's budget to compare it to last year and take out the OPEB funding, it is a 1.52% increase. If you look at this year's budget, including the OPEB funding, I have 2.1, Susan Berry says 2.05, so I'm going to go with what Susan said. But our total appropriation, if you include the OPEB funding and the debt service, is a 1.69% over the prior year. This is our budget as a whole. The total appropriation requested is $29,807,682. That is an increase of $496,545 over the prior year.
Superintendent Wong?
Yes.
How much more time do you need?
May I have one more minute?
Sure.
Thank you. The total assessment is $26,551,082, but the Sudbury portion of that assessment is $22,879,134. And again, this is a thank you to all the hardworking volunteers of the town, as well as the town manager and her staff, and to the Sudbury Public Schools in working together to, for the presentation of this budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Wong. Lest you've forgotten, we're still on the limiting motion. Does the Board of Selectmen have a position on the limiting motion?
Board of Selectmen supports the motion.
Does anyone wish to be heard on the limiting motion? I see no one. A majority vote is required for the limiting motion to pass. Those in favor, please signify by raising your cards. All opposed? That passes by nearly unanimously and by well more than a majority. So the limiting motion is passed. We're on to the main motion under Article 4. Ms. Berry.
Thank you. Move that the town appropriate the sums of money set forth in the column FY17 recommended for FY17 as shown on the next screen.
Does that receive a second?
I haven't finished. Said sums to be raised by transfer of $225,000 from free cash and the remainder to be raised by taxation, except that the following items be raised and designated by transfer from available fund balances and inter-fund transfers. From ambulance reserve for appropriation account to 200 public safety, $641,912, the sum of $6,156,384 set forth as Sudbury Public School employees' benefits to be immediately transferred and added to line item 900, town employees' benefits, so that the employee benefits total will be $10,935,429 to be expended under the town manager. The sum of $194,328 set forth as Sudbury Public School OPEB normal cost to be immediately transferred and added to item 1,000, SPS/town OPEB normal cost, so that the OPEB normal cost total will be $314,094, and to authorize the town manager to transfer $1,117,907 of the funds from item 900, employee benefits, and $314,094 from item 1,000, SPS/town OPEB normal cost, to the OPEB trust established to meet expenses for post-employment health and life insurance benefits for eligible retirees, and to expend such funds for that purpose, and to authorize the purchase of equipment funded under this budget by entering into lease purchase agreements, and to authorize multi-year contracts in excess of 3 years, either by renewal, extension, or purchase options in accordance with the provisions of Mass General Laws, Chapter 30B, Section 12, upon determination by the Chief Procurement Officer to be the most advantageous option.
Okay, does that receive a second? It does. Okay, what I will now do is read each line of the proposed budget and ask if anyone has a motion to amend. Remember, because we have enacted the limiting motion, any motion to increase a line item must include a provision to decrease another line item in the same amount in order that the total amount appropriated under the main motion doesn't exceed the upper limit previously established by the limiting motion. You can also make a motion to decrease a line item. Before we go through this, please note there is a wealth of detail and information regarding each of these line items in the Finance Committee reports that begin immediately after page 27 on your warrant. For instance, if you want to know more about the various components of the SPS budget as it appears in items 300, in Article 4, you need to look no further than the extensive detail and narrative beginning on page 15 of the Finance Committee's report. Before you ask a question, please make sure that you've looked at the Finance Committee's report. Now, I'll now read the Article 4 line items. Please stand and let me know if you have a question or a motion to amend. Sudbury Public Schools net $34,682,619. SPS employee benefits, $6,156,384. SPS OPEB normal costs, $194,328. LS operating assessment net, $22,083,916. LS OPEB normal cost assessment, $203,563. LS operating debt service assessment, $591,655. Minuteman Regional Assessment, $728,141. General Government, $2,825,426. Public Safety, $7,332,129. Public Works, $5,213,559. Human Services, $713,912. Culture and Recreation, $1,282,232. Employee Benefits, $4,779,045. Other and transfers, $508,126. OPEB normal cost, $119,766. Town debt service, $3,628,425. Okay. No one has had any questions or motions to amend with respect to the various line items of the budget. We're going to proceed to a vote. A majority is required. All in favor of the main motion under Article 4, please signify by raising your cards. This requires a majority vote. All opposed? I see one. So this passes by nearly unanimously and by well more than a majority. Moving on to Article 5. I would ask under Article 5, Fiscal Year 17 Transfer of Station Enterprise Fund Budget, a motion from Joan Carlton from the Finance Committee.
Move to appropriate the sum of $276,032 for the transfer station enterprise fund for FY17 and further to authorize use of an additional $16,700 of enterprise funds receipts for the indirect costs. Such sums to be raised by $286,996 in receipts of the enterprise and use of retained earnings of $5,736 of the enterprise.
Does that motion receive a second? It does. Melissa Rodriguez, town manager, for a presentation under Article 5.
Thank you. Very quickly, I want to explain what Enterprise Fund is. An enterprise fund is a separate accounting mechanism for a municipal service which a fee is charged. Plainly, these budgets are not supported by property taxes, but instead are funded by user fees. Typically, the fee charged is enough to provide for the service. The town of Sudbury has three of these accounts. The transfer fund is one of them. Transfer station's trust fund is one of them. This budget is seeing a large decrease this year $223,000 due to a large capital expense for last year, which town purchased a roll-off truck. The Transfer Station Enterprise Fund pays for all the direct and indirect costs at the transfer station, including employee benefits. This account is self-sufficient. There is no rate increase for this year, and $5,736 of retained earnings will be used to subsidize this budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rodriguez. Does the Finance Committee have a position on this article? Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval of the motion under Article 5. Does the Board of Selectmen have a position? Mr. Simon.
The Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Okay, discussion. Anybody wish to be heard on the motion under Article 5? I see no one. This requires a majority vote in order to pass. All in favor, please raise your card. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Article 6. Ms. Carlton for a motion.
Move to appropriate the sum of $574,279 for the Pool Enterprise Fund for FY17, such sum to be raised from $574,279 in receipts of the enterprise.
Okay, does that receive a second? It does. Finance Committee report?
Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Okay, Board of Selectmen.
Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Board of Selectmen supports the article. Is there any discussion? Anyone wish to be heard on the motion under Article 6? I see no one. On to a vote. Requires a majority. All in favor, please raise your card. All opposed? That passes nearly unanimously and by well more than a majority. Article 7. Ms. Carlin.
Move to appropriate the sum of $214,183 for the Recreation Field Maintenance Enterprise Fund for FY17 and to authorize use of an additional $22,575 of the Enterprise Fund receipts for indirect costs. Such sums to be raised from $190,000 in receipts of the Enterprise and the use of retained earnings of $46,758 of the Enterprise.
That receive a second? It does. Finance Committee report.
Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval.
Board of Selectmen.
Board of Selectmen support the article.
Anyone wish to be heard on the motion under Article 7? I see no. I'm sorry?
I have a question.
Yes, sir. Please stand. Can we get a mic to this gentleman, please?
Thank you.
My name is Glenn Merrill Skoloff. I'm at 18 Allen Place. And I just have a question about the retained earnings. This is the second time we've seen it. Where do these retained earnings come from, and where do they live when they're not being used?
Ms. Rodriguez, you want to answer that question?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Can you hear me?
You have to bring that mic right up to your closer face.
Can you hear me now? Retained earnings are technically the free cash for an enterprise fund. So, like, we get free cash from the town budget. Any earnings that are in excess of what we need to spend the year before become the budgetary fund balance or the retained earnings in the enterprise fund account. So they just sit in an account and wait to be appropriated by this meeting.
Are they reported on in the warrant anywhere?
I don't know. I don't believe that they are. No. They are not reported in the warrant anywhere. I don't believe so.
And are these sums that the Finance Committee tracks?
The town accountant and the finance director actually track them. The current balance in the field maintenance retained earnings account is $128,133.31.
Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you, Mr. Merrill Skoloff. Anyone else wish to be heard on the motion under Article 7? I see no one. This requires a majority vote to pass. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Article 8, unpaid bills. Mr. Woodard.
Move to indefinitely postpone the article.
Mr. Woodard has moved to indefinitely postpone Article 8. Does that require? Does that have a second? It does. Presentation by the town accountant, Christy Nyhan.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. As there are no unpaid bills, I ask to indefinitely postpone.
Thank you. Finance Committee position?
Finance Committee unanimously agreed with the IP.
Board of Selectmen?
Mr. Woodard?
The Board of Selectmen supports the motion to IP.
Anyone wish to be heard on this article? I see no one. This requires a majority. I'm sorry. This requires a four-fifths majority? My bad. This requires a majority vote to pass. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Article 9 has been the subject of the consent calendar and is now done. Article 10. Mr. Simon, you have a motion under Article 10.
Moving the words of the article.
Is there a second? There's a second. Is there a Finance Committee person left to report on this article?
I believe the Finance Committee needs a moment, Mr. Moderator.
I was unaware of that. Does the Board of Selectmen have a position on Article 10? Does the Board of Selectmen have a position on Article 10?
The Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Okay. While we're waiting for the FinCom to return, does anyone wish to be heard on Article 10? Mrs. Coe? You need a mic. Okay.
Martha Coe, 14 Churchill Street. I just wanted to hear the FinCom report.
Okay.
The Finance Committee unanimously supports approval of this article.
Anyone else wish to be heard on the... Sorry. Does anyone else wish to be heard on the motion under Article 10? I see no one. This requires a majority to pass. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? I see no one. The motion passes unanimously. Article 11, establish a solar energy revolving fund. Motion by Mr. Braun. Bill Braun from the Energy Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Moving the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. Mr. Braun?
Yes. All right, Mark, help me out here. Where do I point this? Right here? Okay, thank you. I think you're all pretty well familiar with the solar array at the landfill by now, but just as a refresher, as you know, the facility is owned and operated by Palo Verde Capital at no cost to the town. The cost of installation, operating, and maintenance is built into the price of the electricity that the town purchases. The electricity is fed to the grid, and Eversource reimburses the town at the retail price of delivered power, the then retail price of delivered power. The difference is about 9 cents a kilowatt hour, and that occurs as benefit to the town. In April 2015, you may be aware from last year's town meeting, Eversource began issuing checks for the value of the net metering credits without any warning or notice to the town. And as you further may remember from last year's town meeting, the normal mechanism for making disbursements from a revenue stream such as this is through a revolving fund. But that can only happen in an annual town meeting, and as you may remember, our warrant was closed at that time. So that left us with no way to use the net metering credits to pay for the electricity that produced them. Therefore, an appropriation was made from free cash to cover the cost of the electricity purchase for this present fiscal year, and town meeting was advised at that point the revolving fund would be proposed at this town meeting, and this is that follow-up. At present, during this interval, this 12-month interval that you see up here, which could really be a fiscal year, it could be any 12-month interval, but it happens to be the 12-month interval that for which we're receiving checks. And the receipts from Eversource will go into the general fund and will ultimately roll over into free cash, with the intention being, as again expressed at last year's town meeting, to capture the difference between the receipts and the cost of the energy into the Energy Stabilization Fund as had been provided when that stabilization fund was established. The purpose of this, as you can, as you've heard, is it's a way. The main reason it's a way that we can then can pay for the electricity out of the receipts that we get for transferring it to Eversource. But further, as again was mentioned both in the establishment of the stabilization fund a couple of years ago and in the and last year's town meeting. This allows these funds to be visible and used in a deliberate and purposeful way for things that otherwise might not be able to get done. As you can imagine, $100,000 or $200,000 doesn't go a very long way in a $90 million budget. It can get lost pretty easily without any perceived benefit. And this would make projects possible that otherwise might never get to the top of the capital list. And real quickly, this is some examples of the kinds of things that have been done by the Energy Committee. I'll just flip through them pretty quickly. Go back one. By no means exhaustive, but it's kind of a sample. So, as far as the sort of energy initiatives or energy cost savings initiatives by the Energy Committee, it's been about $1.2 million in grants and rebates so far. But these grants, again, I think as you've been made aware, do take some upfront work and expense in order to justify getting them. You've got to sort of prove that that you need this thing and that when you get it, it's going to help you. And they like to see some cost sharing by the town. What you cannot probably see as well, this is just an example. This happened to be paid for by the DOER, but it's a study that we did on Curtis to help justify some of the original green community funding that we got. Some of the prospective projects that may come up, I mean, energy savings initiatives are kind of an ongoing thing. You can always improve and always get better, and there are always things that wear out, and there's always rooftop units that need to be replaced for which there's no capital budget, et cetera, et cetera. But these are the kind of things that we might do with the what we'll call the retained earnings of the solar array. You don't need a recap. I want to give credit to the Sudbury Energy Committee as well as to Jim Kelly, who I'm sure most of you see generally ends up with most of the implementation and follow-up on so many town initiatives, the town financial and administration staff that helps us navigate the waters of municipal finance, and the DOER, of course, who has funded us for most of that $1.2 million in Energy Committee initiatives. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Braun. Finance Committee, Mr. Atwater.
The Finance Committee recommends approval by a vote of 6-1, noting the authorization is for only a year, and there's much discussion to make sure the savings from our solar projects are spent wisely.
Thank you. Board of Selectmen report, Ms. Brown.
Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Discussion. Who wants to be heard on the motion under Article 11? Any questions for Mr. Braun or anyone? Okay, I see no one. Quantum of vote required for this article is a majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes nearly unanimously and certainly by more than a majority. Article 12. Okay, I have to draw your attention to the fact that there is a typo in your warrant. No, that's on 13, right? No, sorry. Premature. Take that back. Article 12, Rolling Rock Stabilization Fund, motion by Mr. Woodard.
Move to amend the purpose of the special stabilization account established by vote under Article 24 of the May 6, 2014 annual town meeting to read as follows: for the purpose of replacing or adding to town or school rolling stock equipment, including toward the purchase, lease, or debt service payments for items classified as such.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Woodard?
When we set this stabilization fund up in 2014, we set it up with the intention of primarily funding DPW rolling stock, and after looking at it, considering this for the last few years, we decided really it should be expanded to include all rolling stock in town because you know, the schools have vans, they have vehicles, the police department has vehicles. So we're basically definitionally changing this fund so that when it is funded, and it has not yet been funded, but when it is funded, we could use it for the purchase of any rolling stock in town, not just the BBW.
Okay. Finance Committee report, Mr. Atwater.
The Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval of this article.
Excellent. Who wishes to be heard on the motion under Article 12? I see no one. The quantum of vote required for passage is majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Article 13. Now, there is a typo in your warrant. And if you look on Article 13 in your warrant, page 10, there is a missing column. You will see fiscal year 14, 15, 16. There should be another column in that table for fiscal year 17. You will be pleased to note that the information is actually contained on page 34 of the Finance Committee report, where the table is recreated and it does have the missing information. So those of you itching to look at the fiscal year 17 column, page 34 of the Finance Committee report. Okay, Article 13, capital budget for fiscal 17. Motion by Mr. Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move to appropriate the sum of $404,000 for the purchase or acquisition of capital items, including but not limited to capital equipment, construction, engineering, and design, including but not limited to the renovation to buildings, said sum to be raised by taxation, and to authorize the town manager to allocate funds as needed between the underlying departments as shown in the following chart. The FY17 operating capital article by department excluding operating leases and capital exclusions, the amounts are as follows. DPW highway, $81,000. Facilities slash SPS, $102,000. Facilities slash town, $125,000. Fire, $96,000. Total, $404,000.
Does that receive a second? It does. Presentation by the town manager.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The FY17 capital expenditures budget is developed and recommended by town staff. It typically includes items from all three cost centers. It includes items that are less than $50,000 in 1 year or less than $100,000 over multiple years. It is funded entirely by the operating budget. There is no need for exclusions or overheads. This year's capital budget is increasing by $11,250 or almost 3%. The facilities capital requests include the following. Improvements to various town buildings for $50,000. This is a yearly appropriation to maintain our buildings. In the Haines phone system, the Haines school phone system, for $27,000, we'll be upgrading existing phone system, which has been failing due to aging hardware. This is a continuing appropriation as well. We've already done the Loring School, the Nixon School, and the Curtis School. We have school floor replacement of $50,000, town carpet replacement of $50,000, and our fire station tight tank for $50,000. In 2013, we completed 14 school floors. In 2014, we completed 12 school floors. And in 2015, we completed 11 school floors. What we're doing is we're removing the existing classroom carpet and cracked tiles and replacing it with vinyl composition tile and area rugs. Most of these floors had not been replaced in 10 to 15 years. This is an example of what some of the floor replacements look like that have already been completed. This is an example of carpet that needs replacement. So this is actually in the Goodnow Library. We'll be replacing carpet there as well as some other buildings as needed. This is a continuation of a project from last year, and the last time this carpet was replaced was 1998. This is an example of the tight tank. This is actually a tight tank that was put in at the new police station. So what a tight tank does is it collects the drainage from the floor inside the fire station apparatus garage. It wasn't required when we built the fire station, but it's currently the DEP standard. DPW has two capital requests. One is a Bobcat loader for $50,000. The second one is a roller for sidewalk paving for $31,000. We're replacing a 2003 Bobcat. This is a piece of equipment that we do utilize year-round. Last year, we spent $1,200 on repairs for this vehicle, and it still has a broken fuel gouge, a broken heat, and is missing several necessary attachments. This is the sidewalk roller that we're replacing. It's a 2005 machine that has chronic issues with the cable. We spent $2,000 on this machine last year, and it needs $5,000 more in repairs to operate this year. We use the sidewalk roller to build, repair, and maintain walkways and roads. The fire is requesting a car 3 replacement of $46,000 and radio box upgrades of $50,000. For the car 3 replacement, we would be replacing a first-line emergency response vehicle used by the shift commander. The current vehicle is a 2011 and would be sent down to a non-public safety department for use. We would be replacing 15 conventional hardwired master boxes with new wireless boxes in 15 town buildings. This is a multi-year project. $50,000 was expended on this last year. Currently, the town is maintaining an expensive and cumbersome copper fire alarm cable that's strung through town on Eversource-owned poles. These new boxes are more reliable and cheaper for the town to maintain. Thank you.
Thank you. Finance Committee? Mr. Atwater?
The Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval.
Mr. Woodard, what's the Board of Selectmen's position on this article?
The Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
Mr. Travers, does the Capital Improvement Advisory Committee have a position on this article?
The CIAC.
Sorry, can you identify yourself, please?
Tom Travers, 32 Old Framingham Road, Chairman of the Capital Improvement Advisory Committee. We support this article.
Okay. Discussion. Anyone wish to be heard on the motion under Article 13? I see no one. This requires a majority vote to pass. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Article 14. Selectman Woodard.
This is Article 14A. Move to raise and appropriate the sum of $265,000 for the purpose of purchasing and equipping a fire department ambulance. Said appropriation to be contingent upon the approval of a Proposition 2.5 capital expenditure exclusion in accordance with General Laws, Chapter 59, Section 21C, paren, I, and a half, close paren.
Pretty good. Okay, is there a second? There is. Is the presentation going to be made by you or the chief?
I was going to take five, and he was going to take five.
You got it.
Good. I got it. Yep. Good. Thanks, Mark. Good evening. My name is Chuck Woodard. I'm a member of the Board of Selectmen, and I'm chairman of our Capital Funding Committee. This is going to take half of the Chief's 10 minutes to give a kind of a foundation presentation for the capital articles that will follow 14 through 25. Just for context, Sudbury has close to $170 million of capital assets that we need to maintain. And if you look at our historical capital spending, this is a graph here, our average spending on capital to preserve that $170 million of assets over the 7 years through fiscal year 11 was only $698,000. And what we're talking about here is replenishment capital to maintain an asset and keep it in good working order, things like boilers and roofs. It doesn't include new projects like, say, a Johnson Farm or a police station, but if you just look at that graph and in the context of $169 million, I think you can see pretty clearly it was not enough. So in response to that, in the fall of 2013, town staff undertook a major bottoms-up inventory of the town's capital assets and delivered this the report you see there, and this became the basis for an analysis of the town's capital needs and a hard look at how far behind were we and how were we going to move forward. So here's where we are today in terms of our current projection using that same report that was updated in 2014 and again in 2015. This is looking at the projected capital spending to maintain our infrastructure. This does not include a large new project like the community center, where, quite frankly, the amount and the timing is a big unknown. So what our mission, the mission of this committee, it really is to recommend funding strategies to the town to ensure that we catch up and then stay caught up and properly fund the capital needs of the town departments and our two school systems. So just a brief explanation of the difference between, for those of you who don't follow these budgets, a briefly explanation of the difference between a capital budget and an operating budget. And I won't read the slide, but a very important takeaway from this is that every capital purchase outside of the operating budget, outside of the smaller items that Melissa just presented, every single capital purchase outside of the operating budget requires taxpayer approval. And that's why we've got 13 separate capital requests in this warrant, and that's why we've got an unusual ballot coming up the week after next in which there are 13 separate capital questions to be answered. Just again, on definitions, when we think of a capital budget in connection with the town's infrastructure, this is the sum of the debt service and the capital exclusions used to purchase the assets, and then the cost of regular replenishment capital to preserve them. Again, things like boilers, roofs, replacement of aging vehicles, that sort of thing. And then just a little accounting note, if we spend $500,000 on the purchase of an asset, that's a $500,000 capital spend. But if we finance it over 5 years, the budget impact, and when we're looking at capital budget, the budget impact is $100,000 a year. So the committee looked at this challenge, and we thought first and foremost about how are we going to maintain taxpayer support for a capital budget that's not only maintaining what we have but kind of catching up from past underspending. So we said to ourselves, well, we want whatever taxes are associated with this program need to be predictable. We'd like to avoid large, you know, year-to-year swings in taxes. And our approach was, and at the time we were halfway through fiscal year 14, let's limit future spending on this, at least for the next 4 to 5 years, to where we are in fiscal year 14. So that's the ceiling. Whatever we're spending in fiscal year 14, that'll be our ceiling for the next 3 to 5 years. And the thought was that as our debt service runs down, you're operating within the ceilings, the debt service runs down, that frees up a little more money to try and catch up on our capital spending without raising taxes. So just a brief reminder that these are recommendations with regard to how to finance these capital requests. The committee was not endorsing any particular capital items, but we were trying to lay out a blueprint for funding them that had a reasonable tax impact and a predictable tax impact. So what are these recommendations? Here are the recommendations for this fiscal year 17. The key one is really the second bullet point there, and that's basically the recommendation that we continue with this thought of a ceiling that limits spending on our existing assets. That's debt service used to buy them and the capital used to maintain them. Limit that kind of capital budget to what we were doing in FY14, and that's what that number is. And then continuing on with our recommendations, the big one, but I think an important one, was to limit the use of debt primarily to large projects so that we preserve our AAA credit rating and from time to time bond some smaller items, such as the fire truck, as a means to try and smooth out the tax impact. So, again, if you think about this business of trying to have a predictable tax impact from capital spending and avoid year-to-year swings, rather than spending $875,000 on a fire truck next year, we're proposing to spend $200,000 next year and $200,000 a year for the following 5 years and basically spread out the cost and spread out the tax impact. So here's a very interesting slide. This is the budget impact of historical capital spending. Again, it's the sum of the debt service used to pay for the assets and the money used to kind of replenish broken parts from time to time. The yellow is debt service. You can see that up until FY14 and 15, most of our capital spend was really on debt service. Here's the projection for the next 5 years. Remember earlier I showed you the slide of projected capital spending. Well, here's the projected budget impact of that capital spending. If you fund it the way the Capital Funding Committee is recommending, you notice up there there's a black line. That's the ceiling. That's the FY14 ceiling. And again, you can see the yellow, the debt service is declining. And as that declines, that gives us a little bit more room to spend money replenishing or purchasing the replacement parts and pieces to kind of maintain our infrastructure. Now, you'll note that the projection is above the black line in most years, and what that says is we're going to continue to have to defer some things from time to time if we're going to try and work within the ceiling, but the amount of deferrals you're looking at here are much less than the sort of deferrals we were undertaking 5 to 10 years ago. So finally, here it is, kind of the nuts and bolts. All here are all the pieces of the capital budget. And what the recommendation, in terms of funding, the recommendation was use capital exclusions this year in the amount of up to $2.2 million, and then bond the fire truck. So a capital exclusion is a one-time bump in taxes. Your taxes go up for 1 year, and the item is paid for. In the case of the fire truck, we recommend bonding it over 5 years. Just an FYI, the capital exclusion recommendation was $2.2 million. If you add up all those items in the warrant and on the ballot, the amount of the capital exclusion pieces, they add up to $2.1 million. And a final couple of notes I just made to myself earlier. The debt service in FY17 is about $1.5 million lower than it was in FY14. And within that ceiling, that's what's enabling us to slowly catch up on that underspending of 10 years ago. Without raising taxes above the ceiling, we can spend more money on capital because we're spending less money on debt service. However, I think as Susan Berry showed earlier, taxes are going up next year if you approve these capital items because we haven't been spending up the ceiling. We've been spending less than the ceiling. And some of that was that we've got a tough capital committee that just kicked out some items. So even though the ceiling was there, they didn't use it all. And last year and the year before, I think as Susan pointed out, we used a fair amount of free cash. So rather than raising taxes, we used free cash, which should be the first choice. But this year we have to pay the piper, and now the taxes go up, but we're not going to go above the ceiling. So now I'll turn this over to Chief Miles. Chief, I hope I gave you 5 minutes.
Yeah, the Chief has about 15 seconds of your 10 minutes. So.
Come on, did I take 10 minutes? Chief, sorry.
Come on up, Chief. Fire Chief Bill Miles.
I don't need much time. We're looking to replace a couple pieces of equipment. We have two ambulances in town. One is a fairly new one. We just got last year in 2015. But from time to time, we're able to run our second one, either when we have a simultaneous call, when the first one's tied up, or sometimes when the first one needs repairs. So we're looking to replace the 2008 ambulance with a new ambulance.
Thanks, Chief. Finance Committee report, Jose Garcia Mateen.
The Finance Committee. The Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval of this article.
What's the Board of Selectmen's position, Mr. Woodard?
The Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
Mr. Travers, what's the position of the Capital Improvement Advisory Committee?
Capital Improvement Advisory Committee supports this article. One additional comment from Mr. Woodard's presentation. Instead of approving $5.7 million worth of expenditures, the Capital Improvement Advisory Committee only approved $5.3 million worth of expenditures. Thank you.
Discussion on the motion under Article 14A. Anyone wish to be heard? Yes, Mrs. Coe.
Martha Coe, 14 Churchill Street. I'd like to point out something that refers to the Sudbury Station issue. They
Mrs.
have
Coe,
a four-story. Okay, it's real.
I'm
my
sorry,
question,
Mrs.
My
Coe.
Question, yeah.
Allow me to interrupt you for just 1 minute, please. The article on under 14A is the purchase of a fire department ambulance. I would greatly appreciate it.
The ambulance. I was interested in the ladder truck. Never mind. I'm sorry.
Okay. Mrs. Coe, I didn't mean to interrupt you. If it had something to do, if what your comment had something to do with the fire department request for an ambulance, I'd happily entertain it. But I just wanted to remind you that it had to be connected. Your comments have to be connected to the article that's being discussed. Okay? Okay. Get your mic back if I unfairly interrupted you.
I lost track. I've been thinking about the ladder, the length of the ladder. I have questions about the ladder truck.
Okay, so that's for another day. Okay, anyone else wish to be heard under 14? The motion under 14A. Yes, sir, right here. Hang on, just a minute. We got to get a mic.
Thank you, Joe Martino, 109 Maynard Farm Road. I have a question of Mr. Woodard. So is the strategy, the way I think you presented it, the strategy being that the FY14 baseline of $5.7 million, if that black line were not to be exceeded by combination of the debt repayment and the new capital allocation, would that mean there's no increase then to the tax bill if that FY14 baseline is adhered to?
There, no, that's not.
Got it.
Okay. That is not correct. What that means is there would be no increase in spending on our existing infrastructure above the level of FY14. But the total amount of money spent on capital in FY17 compared to FY14 is going to be a little bit higher because we've since approved the police station and Johnson Farm. And then if you're trying to compare FY17 to FY16, in FY16 the amount in your tax bill was considerably less than the $5.7 million because we used free cash. So
I understand, yeah.
Okay.
But the exceedances above the black line,
yep,
the exceedances, are, does that translate into the tax increase?
We don't recommend spending above the black line, and the Capital Committee hasn't recommended projects that go above the black line, and we have not and don't intend to go above.
Okay,
the black
and that's
line.
The entire group that we're going to be entertaining tonight?
Yes.
Okay.
But again, just so I'm clear, that this, even though we don't go by the black line, because of the fact that we've used free cash in the past, because our friends
that.
On the Capital Committee were tough, you know, we didn't spend up to the black
right.
line in the past.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Excellent. Other questions or comments on Article 14A? Anyone else wish to be heard? Okay, this requires a majority vote to pass. All in favor, please raise your card. All opposed? That passes nearly unanimously, but by well more than a majority. Article 14B, purchase of a fire department ladder truck. Mr. Woodard.
Move to appropriate the sum of $875,000 for the purpose of purchasing and equipping a fire department ladder truck, including the payment of all costs incidental and related thereto, and to meet said appropriation, the treasurer, with the approval of the Board of Selectmen, is authorized to borrow $875,000 under General Laws, Chapter 44, Section 7, or any other enabling authority, and that the Board of Selectmen is to take any action necessary to carry out this project, provided, however, that this vote shall not take effect until the town votes to approve a Proposition 2.5 debt exclusion in accordance with General Laws, Chapter 59, Section 21C, Parent K, close parentheses.
Does that receive a second? It does. presentation by Bill Miles, Fire Chief.
The ladder truck we have presently is a 1999 model. To try to help you with the specifications of it, it is a pumper, and it also has a 75-foot ladder. We are looking to replace it with a newer model that has pumping capabilities and has a 103-foot ladder. There's a couple of reasons for the extra ladder. A lot of people think of the ladder as going straight up in the air 103 feet. That's not necessarily what we're looking for, but we're looking to be able to reach not only any potential new development, but sometimes we run into a house where there's a long driveway and we can't get as close to the house as we need to. So there's two reasons for purchasing a new one. One is the age of our present ladder truck, and the other one, we'd like a little bit more capability with the ladder.
Thank you, Chief. Finance Committee for a report. Mr. Garcia-Metin.
The Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval of this article. We would like to add that the Finance Committee considered the age of the existing ladder truck, the incremental capabilities of the proposed equipment, with comparisons made to other towns in making this recommendation.
Excellent. Board of Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
Put the Capital Improvement Advisory Committee. Mr. Travers.
Capital Improvement Advisory Committee supports this article.
Excellent. Discussion. Who wishes to be heard under the motion on Article 14B? Mr. Stein.
This is directed towards the chief.
Can you identify yourself?
Robert Stein, 7 Thompson Drive. About 50 years ago, I took geometry, so I've forgotten about it. Based on a 103-foot ladder, would that cover a potential subway station 4 stories high?
A lot of it, Bob, you're right, it depends on geometry. It depends on how close we can get to those buildings. We've been looking at the designs both at Sudbury Station and the National Development property down at Raytheon, and we are trying to specify within the confines of the fire code some access roads and access areas for the ladder truck. So there are 2.5-story houses in this town that we may not be able to reach with a 103-foot stick. It all depends on how close we can get the truck to the building. But we are working with any potential developers to make it possible to get as close as we can.
Okay. Questions or comments on Article 14B? Anyone else wish to be heard? Sorry, right here, sir.
Danny Bellum, 28 Maple Avenue. Just a quick question. What happens to the old gear? Do we sell it? Do we get
the old ladder truck?
Or any of this old gear that we're replacing?
The ambulance will get traded in. We're going to get about $12,000 for trading the ambulance. The ladder truck is a little harder to put a value on. Part of the problem is that when we order this new ladder truck, it takes about 1.5 years to be delivered. So we won't want to give up our old one till the new one's delivered. So we have come to some type of a tentative agreement with the dealership where we're going to buy the new ladder truck, and we'll as the time gets closer to actually turn it in, we'll take that trade-in money and we'll use it to equip the truck, buy radios and hose and things like that that we'll need to equip the new vehicle.
Thank you. Further questions or comments on Article 14B? Mrs. Coe.
Martha Coe, 14 Churchill Street. I brought up the issue of the Sudbury Station with the 4-story buildings they want to bring for us. And I wanted to know what kind of, whether we were getting a pumper. It sounded like we were getting a pumper and a ladder to that replace what we have now, which can go around the streets in this town, which are narrow and winding, without getting into any trouble. And I thought about the fact that there is a relationship between the length of the ladder and the height of buildings that are allowed in town by the zoning bylaw. And at least in the past, the height of any building in town was determined by the length of the ladder or the fire truck, which makes sense. And so when you have talk about four-story buildings coming in town, we're buying a fire truck. I wanted to, if this is referred to, the fire truck is talked about, its title is ladder truck. The title on the ballot question is ladder truck, but the report said pumper and ladder. And, I think that when it comes to public, when I was in the Highway Commission, I learned that you think twice about not considering public health and safety, and replacing this truck is public health and safety. So I am for buying it. But I was wondering if we were buying a pumper, if we were buying a replacement, or were we buying a ladder truck to provide for this Sudbury Station thing. Project which has four-story buildings.
Okay, and Chief, can you address that question?
The truck that we have now has the ability to pump water, and it has a ladder on it. So we could use it. Even if we did not need the ladder, we could use the pumping capability.
Okay. Does that answer your question, Mrs. Coe?
Yes. That makes good sense. And I am for buying the equipment that was the equipment we have now is going to have a bigger ladder than the older one did, but it's still going to be a reasonable size for using in the town.
That's correct.
Yeah.
There are longer sticks on a ladder truck, but then the truck itself becomes too large to maneuver around the streets in this town. So I think that a 103-foot stick, the size of the chassis, the wheelbase, and so forth, is fill all our needs.
So it is for the present town, not for the four-story proposed building.
I think this is the longest stick that we could reasonably put on a truck that we could maneuver throughout the whole town.
I agree. Even
whether or not Sudbury Station or anything was coming, we would buy the same ladder truck.
Okay.
I think it will be sufficient to service the buildings at a building like Sudbury Station.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank
Great.
You very much.
Thanks. Other questions or comments regarding Article 14B? Anyone else wish to be heard? This gentleman over here.
Hi, my name is Terry Keeney, 71 Blueberry Hill Lane. I thought a recommendation to find out how this compares, how your request compares to other towns and what their ladder structure are in new equipment versus old equipment. How long do other towns keep equipment? It seems like it's not very old, so it's a lot of money. So,
I agree with you. It is a lot of money. The first thing to consider is, again, this truck, it will take a year and a half to get the new truck, so we do try to plan ahead just a little bit. We normally keep our fire trucks 15 years on the front line, and then we keep them 5 years in reserve. So, for example, we do have a pumper that's a 1997 model that we use in reserve. But we only have one ladder truck. We don't use a reserve ladder truck, and this is a first-line piece going from our Station 1. So I've taken a look at this. I've been involved in the fire apparatus in this town for over 30 years, and I think this is a prudent time to upgrade this truck before it gets to the point where we have to start spending a lot of money. Because when you start spending money on fire apparatus, you don't spend it in the hundreds. You can quickly spend it in the thousands of dollars.
Follow-up question? Can you hear? But how does it compare to what other...
Wait a minute. Did that answer your question, Mr. Kennedy?
Well, no, because I asked how... It was a recommendation to find out how this compares, your request compares to what other towns are doing.
I think other towns use similar time frames for replacing their apparatus.
And you've looked at that?
Yes, I have. I look at it almost every day.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. There's a woman right here in the red shirt that wishes to be heard. Ma'am, could you stand up and get a mic?
Hi, I'm Janie Dretler at 286 Goodman's Hill Road. I have a question. If we have a development at Avalon on Route 20, large development, and we have one in Sudbury Station in the historic district, both with very large buildings, and there's a fire at both places. What is the plan?
We use mutual aid for those types of situations. We're not a big enough fire department to handle two fires like that simultaneously, so we would call Wayland or Marlboro Framingham, much like those towns would call us if they had a situation like that.
And they have the right size ladder truck?
Yes, they do. Okay. Yeah, Wayland's looking at a brand new ladder truck. Framingham has a tower ladder. Marlboro has a tower ladder.
Okay, and given the current design that's being presented by Sudbury Station to the town, would that work for the 103 ladder truck with the design that's being presented to town currently?
Repeat the last part of that again, please.
The design that the developer is presenting to the town currently,
right,
will the ladder truck work in the current design that's being presented to the town?
About the longest ladder that is made today is 100, and I'd say the longest practical ladder is 110-foot ladder. Again, once you collapse that ladder, when you see the ladder on top of the ladder truck, obviously it's collapsed. That determines the size of the rest of the truck. So it's not an unlimited, you can't buy an unlimited length of the stick on the ladder truck. So that 103 is something that I feel is prudent for us to use on a large building if we have to get a little distance away from it, and also to be able to maneuver up streets like Willis Road and the north side of town.
Will you have enough room to maneuver in the high-density development,
yes,
Sudbury Station?
Yes.
Given the current design that's being presented to the,
yes,
town?
Yes. That's something we've spent a lot of time on. When these developers give us these plans, that's one of the first things we look at, is what's of the fire lanes and access around the buildings and so forth.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Matthews. Can you please stand and identify yourself, please? Okay, a motion has been made to call the question. That would require a majority to pass. All those in favor of calling the question and proceeding to a vote, raise your cards. All those opposed, that passes unanimously. Okay, we're on to the main motion under Article 14B. This requires a two-thirds majority to pass because it's a bonded item. All those in favor of the motion under Article 14B, please raise your cards. All those opposed, that passes nearly unanimously and certainly by well more than the two-thirds majority required. Article 15, DPW rolling stock replacement. Mr. Woodard.
Move to raise and appropriate the sum of $492,500 for the purchase of rolling stock, vehicle, and or equipment for the Department of Public Works. Said appropriation to be contingent upon the approval of a Proposition 2.5 capital expenditure exclusion in accordance with General Laws, Chapter 59, Section 21C, paren I.5.
Does that receive a second? It does. Presentation by Bill Place.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I'm here tonight to ask the Hall to appropriate $492,500 for the replacement of three pieces of equipment: a 16-year-old six-wheel dump truck, a 12-year-old front-end loader, and an 11-year-old multipurpose tractor. The replacement cycle of these vehicles is 7 to 10 years. To date, I have spent over $64,604 in repair costs on these three previous pieces of equipment alone. DPW depends on these vehicles. Without these vehicles, work assignments will take longer, employees will be less productive, and less efficient. One vehicle out of service will cause snow removal operations to take longer. Unplowed streets will cause delays in school openings and or closings, and also impact on emergency response. The tax impact on this article of the average home will be a one-time payment of $73. Your continued support has been greatly appreciated.
Thank you, Mr. Place. Finance Committee report.
Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval of this article.
Board of Selectmen report, Mr. Woodard?
The Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
Capital Advisory Committee? Capital Improvements Advisory Committee, Mr. Travers?
The CIAC supports this article.
Discussion. Who wishes to be heard on Article 15? Does anyone wish to be heard on Article 15? I see no one. Okay, this requires a majority vote. All in favor for the article, the motion under Article 15, please raise your card. All opposed? That passes nearly unanimously and certainly by well more than the majority required. Article 16, School Rooftop HVAC Unit Replacement, motion by the Energy Committee. Jim Kelly.
Move to raise and appropriate the sum of $75,000 to be expended under the direction of the Facilities Director for the purpose of purchasing a school rooftop HVAC unit, including the payment of all costs incidental or related thereto. Said appropriation to be contingent upon the approval of a Proposition 2.5 capital expenditure exclusion in accordance with General Law, Chapter 59, Section 21, C, I, and 1/2.
Excellent. Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Kelly, for a presentation.
Mark, there's no... Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Thank you, everybody, and I applaud everybody here tonight to actually take the time and be here and listen to this important meeting. Before I start with Article 16, I do want to make a couple mentions that you may see a lot of articles from now till maybe six or seven more that say submitted by the Facilities Director, which I did submit these articles. These are very important capital articles for the town. But these are not my articles per se. These were a combination of efforts by many people, many committees, residents, people we've heard throughout the year. The staff started their capital deliberations last summer, and it won't be long after the end of the fiscal year we'll do the same for next year. And you'll see that there are a couple, for instance, Chief Scott Nix is going to present one of these articles. Director of Public Works, Bill Place, will also present. So I just thought that would be a little bit upfront to understand that all these capital articles with my title next to them are a joint effort, a collaborative effort by many people in town. So Article 16 is to appropriate $75,000 for the replacement of a rooftop HVAC unit. In the warrant article, you will see it says either at the Loring or Curtis School. This is actually written several months ago, and now we know that this rooftop unit that we want to replace is located at the Loring School. This article you may have heard a little bit last year when we came to the town and asked for funds to replace a rooftop unit at either the Loring or Noy School. Well, last year, the decision was to replace two condensing units at the Peter Noy School. This plan is a proactive approach to some of the units in the town that we see are becoming problematic and need to be replaced before they fail. So I mentioned the Noy School. I just want to take 2 seconds. I know we're moving pretty quick tonight, so I don't want to slow down the momentum. But the Noy School was a great project. We did it last summer. The unit on the left is the rooftop unit. And on the right is a story behind that picture, is that that hallway in Peter Noy School was a complete disaster because some of the units are above that ceiling. So only days before school started, that hallway was a complete wreck. So I want to give a lot of credit to the custodians in the school and Joe Kay for a really successful project. Pardon my voice. This is... These are the rooftop units. One of these is at Curtis, one's at Loring. They basically look like your air conditioning units, but they're a lot bigger, a lot heavier, and they're difficult to place because they are on roofs. For instance, this is a picture of the Loring School. Give you an idea where the rooftop unit is. You can see several rooftop units, those big white things on that roof. But this particular unit is over the library, and it cools the library and administration offices at Loring School. Similar slide I showed last year. This is just to give you an idea of the sense of how we have a couple dozen of these units scattered throughout the town on our roofs. This picture is from Noyce last summer, lifting the unit onto the roof. And I think if there's anything good about a flat roof, which there isn't really, it's a good place to put mechanical equipment. That's the best I can do for that. So, again, another picture of the condensing unit on the roof. It's a big unit. Couple points. Joe Kopczewski, we go by Joe K, has been in the HVAC business for probably 30 years, and we look to Joe as the expert because he is. And Joe takes care of these units, and these are some of the comments that he made. I showed this slide to my wife. She said, it looks like you might have got a lemon when they put this one on the building, because there's a lot of costs that have been incurred over the years to maintain it. So in Joe's opinion, this unit is the one that we should look forward to replacing as soon as possible. Again, another picture of the rooftop unit. You can see that it's not a simple removal and replacement. They come with a lot of associated pipes and wires and the refrigerant. I think I glossed over that is a type of refrigerant that they no longer make. It's not a good environmentally safe refrigerant, so as that refrigerant or these repairs increase on the old units, the cost of those repairs keeps increasing. So finally, just want to note the support of the selectmen, the school committee, finance committee, and the capital improvement committee. And you can see the tax impact. This is a one-year hit on our tax bills. It's $15. Just so you know, that rooftop on the right is not in Sudbury. I was just looking for kind of a picture of rooftop units. I just feel bad for the person who has to take care of that roof. So, that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kelly, Finance Committee report.
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article by a vote of 7-1. We would like to add that the Finance Committee expects that requests to replace rooftop HVAC units will continue to appear on future warrants, as many of these units are nearing the end of their serviceable lives. One member of this committee believes that waiting to replace the units has limited downside, as they are not in imminent danger of failure. However, the committee's consensus supports a scheduled approach to replacing the rooftop units.
Thank you. Board of Selectmen.
The Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Capital Improvement Advisory Committee.
The Capital Improvement Advisory Committee supports this article.
Excellent. Discussion. Who wants to be heard on the motion under Article 16? Yes, sir.
Dan Carty, Stonebrook Road. So you flashed up a slide there pretty quickly. I did a quick count. I think I counted 46 units.
Let him finish his question.
I think I counted 46 units. And to the gentleman's point on the Finance Committee is, you know, we want to start to plan for these things. I guess my question really is, are we looking to 45 more tax increases for this, or is this going to be something that's going to be budgeted going forward? We know we've got a lot of these coming towards end of life, and are we going to expect a hit every single time something like this comes up when it's really maintenance that we should be planning for?
Let me give that to Mr. Woodard.
Maintenance is this working?
Get it right up to your close to your face.
Hello? We got another one here. How about that?
That works better.
So maintenance is in the operating budget. What we're talking about here is periodically replacing units when they've reached the end of their useful life. The question, one question is whether you wait till they die or you replace them proactively before they die. And yes, we have those that many units, and we'll have on an ongoing basis the need to replace them as they reach the end of their useful life. And the purpose of that that capital funding plan I went through earlier was, and all these units, if you look at that 90-page report, you'll find all these units probably listed one at a time, scheduled out. And the idea is we've tried to plan out when the units need to be replaced and then plan the funding for them. And the funding is intended to, as I said earlier, keep a level impact on taxes. So, yes, every time one of these comes up, you'll have to say yes. And if you don't say yes, your taxes will go down. But if you say yes, your taxes won't go up above the level of FY14.
Does that answer your question, Mr. Carty? Okay.
No, I don't think so. So maintenance maybe was a poor choice of words on my part. I guess a better choice of words is we know that we need to do something about this. So I guess I'm just a little confused as to why a tax increase. Why not budget for this and build it into what we know that we're going to need to spend, whether it's an HVAC unit, whether it's a pumper truck, whether it's a dump truck. I mean, these are things that we know are coming. They shouldn't sneak up on anybody.
Can you comment on that, Mr. Woodard?
Yeah. So one approach would be to, rather than asking for $2 million this year, $1.5 million last year, whatever the number was for capital exclusions and the like, would be to just ask for a one-time Proposition 2.5 override in the amount of some number that we think will take us through the next 5 years, and then not go back to the ballot for these capital items. And that's, I think that's worth considering. The downside is you take away that vote at the ballot with regard to spending this kind of money. So it's the trade-off is, as we're handling it now, we're asking the taxpayers both here and at the ballot box, do you want to spend money on this or not? If we were to go to the budgeted approach that you suggest, which I don't disagree with it, we would have a built-in amount to spend every year on capital items, and the only question with regard to spending would be, is town meeting willing to support the individual items? It's much like the town managers at the small capital budget. It's a good question.
All set? Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard on the motion under Article 16? No one. Okay. This requires a majority vote. All those in favor of the motion under Article 16, please raise your cards. All those opposed? That passes nearly unanimously, but certainly by well more than a majority. Article 17, town and school parking lot sidewalk improvements. Motion by Mr. Kelly.
Move to raise and appropriate the sum of $84,000. To be expended under the direction of the Facilities Director for the purpose of constructing, reconstructing, or making extraordinary repairs to the Sudbury Public Schools and Towns driveways, parking lots, and sidewalks, including payment of all costs incidental or related thereto. Said appropriation to be contingent upon the approval of a Proposition 2.5 capital expenditure exclusion in accordance with General Law, Chapter 59, Section 21C, I and 1/2.
Is there a second? There is. Mr. Kelly, presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Article 17 is a article that is requesting funds to improve, restore, repair, replace parking lot. This particular article, similar to the last one, had developed with more project, if you will. If you read the warrant, it would have included some school parking lots. Primarily, we were looking at trying to replace some of the Loring School parking lot, as well as the Sudbury Fire Department headquarters. That request was at $200,000. But during the budget season and deliberations with the Capital Committee, we understand there's a limit. We understand that we don't have the capacity to vote and approve all of these funds, and we're considerate of that tax impact. So the Capital Committee, as well as myself and the Director of Public Works, the school committee, we eliminated the Loring School parking lot, and this project right now is primarily going to be repairs, replacement of the Sudbury Fire Department headquarters at Hudson Road. The parking lot, a couple years ago, I think actually 2 or 3 years ago, this was a picture of the Nixon School. This was a deteriorated parking lot. And frankly, when I look at this picture now, I wonder how we even happened to have it let go that long. But again, it's always a struggle. It's always a struggle with capping our taxes and being considerate about that. But on the other hand, we can't let things deteriorate like this. So we continue that struggle, and we try to make the best decisions we can with a balancing of spending and tax impact. That picture turned into this during the summer when the work took place to do the renovations. I like this slide because it kind of shows the extent of this type of work. This is heavy equipment, which means heavy dollars. It's asphalt, curbing, granite curbing. I believe in granite curbing. I think granite curbing should last at least my lifetime and probably others as well. Last year, we were able to acquire funds to finish the Curtis School. This was the deteriorated state of the Curtis School. And then at the end of the summer, that's what the Curtis School parking lot looked like. Now, I don't want to dwell on the past, but I do think, in a sense, that we should recognize the successes of the town. I mean, these were big items, very much appreciated, I think, by the residents, by the faculty of the schools, maybe even by the kids. This year, again, going back to the purpose of this article, is $84,000. This is the pictures of the Sudbury Fire Department at Hudson Road. The picture on the left is the sidewalks that are just getting old. We know it. We live in a harsh environment in the Northeast, in Sudbury. We have tough winters. We have really, really bad winters, like 2 years ago, and we have pretty bad winters, like last year. But every winter, we get the sand and the salt and the wear and tear. The picture on the right is the back of the fire department. We will be adding drainage in that location, as well as grading the parking lot to better get to that drain so it gets off the site. So this is a title I called Our New Fire Station is 24 Years Old, because I do still hear that. You mean the new station. And I think a lot of us, I mean, maybe a lot of you, maybe feel like you just approved this station, but 24 years has gone by. And, you know, we want to make sure we don't let it fall into complete disrepair. You heard the tight tank mentioned. That was in the operating capital budget. And, again, these are the pictures from the police station. One of the reasons why we chose to do the Sudbury Fire Department parking lot is because we do need to put this tight tank in. This is a DEP requirement. There is no grandfathering on this requirement. We're going to do this. We want to meet the law. We want to protect our stormwater. And this is one of those things. So this ties into sort of a bigger plan. Lawrence School, I mentioned. I don't want to forget about it. We drive through parking lots sometimes. You don't realize how bad and kind of crumbling they are. We will be able to do some repairs and keep this up and make it safe, and perhaps we can tend to it next year. Again, just pictures of the sidewalks. You probably know I love pictures. They do. Pictures are worth a thousand words. The picture on the right is actually something we will get to this summer. That's a sidewalk, and it really needs to be repaired. So finally, just a note on the support of the selectmen and the capital and the finance committee, and a note on the tax impact. Again, it's a capital exclusion. It's a one-year hit to the taxes. And, again, looking at the fire station at 24 years old, we're trying to keep it up and make it last another 24 years. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mr. Kelly. Finance Committee, Mr. Manassian.
Finance Committee recommends approval of this article, 5 in favor, 2 opposed. The dissenting votes were thought that this could be deferred and would rather see a bigger picture as far as what driveways and sidewalks needed to be replaced.
Okay, Board of Selectmen. Mr. Woodard.
The Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Capital Improvement Advisory Committee.
Capital Improvement Advisory Committee supports this article.
Discussion. Who wants to be heard on Article 17? Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 17? I see this gentleman right here. I'm sorry. Ma'am, I apologize.
Sorry about that. Hello. Elizabeth Touche, 98 Maynard Road. I have a question as it relates
to... I'm sorry to interrupt you. Can you please repeat your name and address?
Elizabeth Touche.
And your address?
Maynard Road.
What number?
98.
Thank you. Please continue.
My question is in relation to this article as well as others, how the decision is made to leverage free cash or not leverage free cash rather than a... Prop 2.5 exclusion.
Who wants to speak to that? Mr. Woodard.
If the free cash was available, we would have gone there first. It was not available.
Okay, thank you. So the free cash that was outlined at the beginning, there were several items that were accounted for. Is it because of the OPEB?
As I recall, looking at the amount of free cash, there was a certain amount of it that was set aside on the recommendation of the Finance Committee that we have a certain minimum cushion.
Right.
Some of it was voted to help support the operating... Some of it was voted to support the operating budget, the school's operating budget. Some of it was voted into the stabilization fund, to bring the stabilization fund up to 5%, and by the time all of those votes were taken and those monies removed from the free cash, there was only $46,000 left over. So when we looked at the funding for these various capital articles beginning late in the fall, we realized that this year, unlike the last 2 years, there would not be free cash available to fund capital purchases, and we would therefore have to ask for more capital exclusions.
Okay,
does that answer your question, Ms. Touche?
Yes, it does.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard on this article? Okay, I see no one. The vote required is a majority to pass. All in favor of the motion under Article 17, please raise your cards. All those opposed? It passes nearly unanimously, but certainly by well more than a majority, and therefore the article passes. Article 18, Nixon School Crosswalk Traffic Signal. Chief Nix, for a motion.
Yeah. Good evening, everybody. Scott Nix, Chief of Police, and also Jim Kelly's double. Move to raise and appropriate the sum of $25,000 to be expended under the direction of the Facilities Director for the purpose of constructing, reconstructing, or making extraordinary repairs to the crosswalk at Nixon School, including installing a crosswalk traffic signal at the intersection of Concord Road, Morse Road, and the driveway entrance to the Nixon School, including the payment of all costs incidental or related thereto, said appropriation to be contingent upon the approval of a Proposition 2.5 capital expenditure exclusion in accordance with General Law, Chapter 59, Section 21C, I and 1/2.
Does that receive a second? It does. Chief Nix?
So while Mark's getting it up here, safety is paramount. And for those of you that might be Nixon parents and or traverse to the intersection, that particular crosswalk has been very dangerous. It's been something on my radar for a while, and we're trying to come up with a good solution to it. It's a diagonal crosswalk as it is designed right now, and it involves a four-way intersection. Our students and young students traverse that every day that they go to school. Others traverse it to go across from overflow parking at Featherland. It's just really a problematic thing. So in getting our last dime out of Bill Place, one of the things that we're doing is trying to combine two crosswalks that are there, one of which we had a pedestrian accident at in December of 2015. Thankfully, minor injuries, but nonetheless, we averted a catastrophe. We have many close calls at the Nixon crosswalk. We've also had a road rage incident that resulted in the arrest of a gentleman for assault on one of our tenured crossing guards there. So, you know, it is of a safety concern. So we try to look at it. Then we try to balance. We originally looked at different options and so forth to include an $85,000 option. And we thought with maybe the reconfiguration and combination of a crosswalk going off, moving it away from the intersection with a nice picturesque crossway walkway through the Featherland Park, and combining those two, it would be a safer one-part crossing with something that gets your attention as you're trying to cross there. So this is kind of a picture of the current conditions, but Director Place has added a couple of additional signs temporarily, but this just kind of gives you a picture of the idea, an idea of what we exist. This particular light is something we looked at. You've seen them at the rail trail crossings. They light up yellow, then they light up red. It's an $85, maybe more, $1,000 expense. Includes additional expenses for installing it, running electrical wires, expense of electricity, and so forth. So we try to come up with a balance of what we felt would be appropriate. So these are a couple examples of solar-powered lights. You don't need to run the conduit. You don't need to pay the electricity. But again, with the reconfiguration of the sidewalk or the crosswalk and sidewalk, along with a signalized that grabs your attention while you're trying to cross, we think that that was kind of a model that would be appropriate that we can try out, that we feel would be a much safer crossing for our youth as well as the parents and others that may use the facility. And it gives us an opportunity to maybe see and come forward in the future for other problematic crosswalks. You know, a lot of people, we get requests all the time, can you put a crosswalk here? And we got to consider sightline distances and things. But what I always try to remind people is we don't have cement barriers that pop up and stop the cars when you're trying to cross. It's just not there. So we try to educate as far as crossing appropriately. This would be a personnel-operated activation, not an automatic one where kids would just walk across. And we try to educate the kids as far as we go there. As far as boards and committees that support this article, you can see everybody there. The safety, particularly of our kids, is important to us. But it's also the safety of parents, the safety of people that use the facility, whether it be Nixon, and if we can combine that crosswalk with those students that walk up to Featherland to park their cars as well. I'd run through it very quickly, and thank you. Any questions, be more than happy to answer.
Thanks, Chief. Finance Committee, Mr. Manassian.
Finance Committee unanimously supports this article.
Board of Selectmen, Mr. Woodard.
The Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Capital Improvement Advisory Committee, Mr.
CIAC supports this article.
Discussion. Who wishes to be heard on Article 18? Right here. Yeah, just a minute. Let me get your mic.
Hi, Kim Bennett, 500 Front. So if you're not going to have the diagonal any longer, so will there end up being two crosswalks to cross Morse and Concord?
So we would have one crosswalk just across Morse, and then we would combine the two crosswalks. Well, we hope to have a design to combine both crosswalks on Concord Road, which is the more problematic crossing,
right,
together with this signalized thing. And it would be moved away from the intersection. So those coming out of Nixon and or out of Morse would have plenty of sight line in order to see and stop, but you don't have that busyness of everybody trying to get out and get to their work and appointments and everything else that really causes congestion and more of a worry for us.
Okay, so would we have the crossing guard as well?
Oops. You would still have the crossing guard would still remain, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Janie Dretler, 286 Goodman Hill. With the proposed Sudbury Station development, and where are those children going to go to school? Are they going to go to Noyes? Are they going to go to Nixon? And will this crosswalk address the needs of this development coming in with hundreds of cars going up Concord Road and also future development for Noyes? I imagine that we'll have to address a crosswalk going across Concord Road to Noyes and a crosswalk or address the very dangerous crosswalk that stands currently
on Old Sudbury Road. A boy was hit. His bike was hit crossing Old Sudbury Road during the town construction. My children were asked by the police to walk in Old Sudbury Road during town construction with rush hour traffic.
Ms. Drettler, is there a question?
My question is, will the crosswalk at Nixon be suitable enough for the children who may have to walk from Sudbury Station up Concord Road?
Chief, do you have an opinion on that?
I don't know what enrollment goes where, but I can say that it will be a far safer setup, and again, kind of a test, so we might be able to improve other areas. I know that the center lights has improved the crossing of Concord Road with a signalized area. Obviously, with increased traffic, increased volume, we definitely can concern about safety. But as far as the Nixon, I'm very confident that it's a far better setup than we have now and at a relatively inexpensive price compared to going to the $85,000 model with you know, the big red lights and stuff. That's originally what I had recommended. But, again, in balancing funds and taxes, we try to come up with a multiple approach to include the reconfiguration as well as the signalized. Okay. Old Sudbury Road is definitely problematic as well.
Okay, sorry. Further comments or questions on Article 18? Yes, sir, right here.
Hi, Jim Cavanaugh, 9 Codman Drive. The sidewalk on Morse Road right now is on the south side of Morse, and then the sidewalk on Concord is on the west side of Concord.
So we are going to be extending the sidewalk on what would be the Fetterland side of Concord up to just the other side of Codman without cutting down any trees. I might mention that, you know, that's been problematic, but we will have a crossing again away from the intersection up just what would be east of Codman Drive to cross over onto the Fetterland side, then come down and kind of traverse through the area that's really not so usable, next to where the tennis courts would be, inside of the bushes of where the ice skating rink has been in the past, and then connect and meander on over further out into Concord Road.
Okay, so my question was, there's a lot of people that walk up Concord Road and then diagonally cross across. I see a lot of the high school track team mm-hmm. running across there, a lot of children coming up and going across over to Nixon. Where would they cross? Right, so near the church from the St. Elizabeth's
corner. So if they're crossing Morse Road, they would cross only across Morse Road, no diagonal to get to the other side.
And will there be a crosswalk there, too, across Morse? There will. Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thanks. Anyone else wish to be heard on this article? Okay. I see no one. This requires a majority vote to pass. All in favor, please raise your card. All opposed? Chief, that passes unanimously. Oh, I'm sorry. It doesn't. Do you have a point of order, ma'am? Or? Okay. Let me declare this vote, and then you can ask your question. Okay, then what you need to say is, I have a point of order. Okay, now you get your mic. Identify yourself.
Kathy Jacob, Old Lancaster Road, 328. I noticed the last two or three, it didn't matter with the vote, but it says in the warrant here that it's 2/3 vote. The last two or three have been that way, and so I was wanting to know why you were saying a majority and why are they saying 2/3?
Good question. The warrant is drafted such that if there is borrowing associated with a particular article, then there's a higher vote required in order to pass it. So a 2/3 vote is generally required for any article that's moneyed, or where borrowing is part of the article. There's no borrowed money under this article, and so it only requires a majority vote. Does that answer your question? Okay, so I'm going to declare the vote. It passes by well more than a majority, and I think nearly unanimously, Chief. So thank you very much. Article 18 is passed. I note that we are past the witching hour, so I'll entertain a motion to adjourn and continue our annual town meeting until May 3rd, commencing at a time immediately after the conclusion of the special town meeting, which will start tomorrow, May 3rd at 7:30 a.m. Do I have that motion? Is there a second? I'm sorry, PM. PM.
You don't want to start by hand?
All right. All in favor of adjourning till tomorrow? All opposed? We're adjourned.
Thank you.